This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Folks, that is the rocket taking Weekend Confirmed right into the E3 week. Yes, it's coming up next week, and we have all kinds of great stuff planned for you on this show as we get ready to go into E3. I'm joined by the two Jeffs, Jeff Cannata.
Yo!
Who has a new play debuting if you're here in the Los Angeles area.
Yeah, actually, would love for you to come down. I hear we're sold out Friday and Saturday, but Sunday is still available at night, and we go for until July 8th. Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, and I promise full frontal female nudity.
And he did come in and say he's been busy. He's been making out all
the time. There's a lot of me making out. There's a lot of me doing shenanigans. It's a sex comedy.
Shenanigans.
And I promise hilarity. It's really, really. I like it a lot. I think it's
theater
a fun
website
show.
Tickets. Where would you go?
Easiest place to go is jeffcannata.com. You'll get the links there because it's all much more complicated. So go to jeffcannata.com with two N's, one T, and you'll get it.
There you go. Indie Jeff has not been spending his morning making out, but he has a lot of iPad games to talk about today. If we get to those as well as everything
it's
else,
kind of the same.
Yeah,
thing.
That's true. Yeah, it is pretty much the same thing.
Caressing your iPad.
Yes, all the touching.
Oh, baby,
multi-touch.
Love you.
Multi-touch.
And you have the new iPad, so
I do.
Yours is better than far superior to mine.
It is, yeah, it's damn pretty. I will say that.
Although mine has a webbing back that just says Weekend Confirmed, unlike Jeff's that says Totally Rad Show and Weekend Confirmed.
And thank you again. What was the guy's name that did that? We should know that. But thank you again for saying that. That was awesome. I love it.
And then next to him, or sandwiched between the Jeffs. Oh,
Jeff Sandwich.
Is the other Jay.
You're the meat in our Jeff Sandwich.
I know.
Just
glad you're wearing clothes, unlike in your play.
Yeah, there's a lot of not wearing clothes. I got to show you guys pictures. We took pictures today.
Anyway. Insomniac's James Stevenson
is
here.
Jeff is sitting here trying to show me pictures of him in his underwear.
No. What? How would I?
Who serendipitously just revealed their new game is called Full Frontal
Assault. Boom.
It's synergy.
It is total synergy. We're actually sponsoring the play. Did you hear that?
I would appreciate that. We could use it.
All right, so here's what we're doing today, folks, because it is pre-E3. We're going to do the last three segments of the big three in the order that you're going to see them next week. So second segment is Microsoft, third segment is Sony, and we will bring it home on Nintendo. Right now, we're going to go into what we've been playing, because we've still been playing a hell of a lot of stuff, and I'm going to like get this through quickly. These guys here are still playing Diablo 3. Jeff has gone to hell.
Yeah, I'm in hell mode
with
my barbarian.
And he's gone to rainbows and butterflies. And
I've also been to Whimsyshire, which is pretty much my favorite place in the world.
Really?
It's pretty great. It's pretty great. I love the map. I mean, I guess these are spoilers if you want to be spoiled for Whimsyshire. But Whimsyshire is basically the cow level, is to Diablo 3 what the cow level was for Diablo 2.
Did you do the cow level?
Yeah, back in the day?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was brutally hard.
Oh, yeah.
It was...
Well, this is based on the difficulty level that you're in, and I've only been to normal difficulty level of Whimsyshire so far, and I'm far outpaced the difficult... You know, I'm a level 54 right now, so...
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was having no problems, but I now have to earn money to upgrade my staff.
He's part of the 30% or 20%.
Yeah, you see that? People who've been to Inferno, like 6%?
It's like 2%.
Was it 2?
2% have unlocked Inferno.
Well, because hell is fucking brutal.
80%.
Quarter of the day.
Actually, it's not. So if you read that dev, if you read the dev blog, what's really happening is that people, it sounds to me like what they did, like reading between the lines, that their level progression didn't work out quite in synchronicity with their item progression. Because what they're saying is that people who are going into the next progression are heading there without enough gear.
Without
geared up enough stuff to match their stats.
Item level is hidden right now, and
I think
they should reveal that.
It's going to be unhidden over 60.
That's smart, because you need to know, because it's sometimes it's not clear that this is better than that, or, you know.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that's interesting.
Things that might be slightly better, but your class, like getting the boost to your class is a lot better than an extra point of damage, maybe, because that secretly boosts your.
But if you think about the way we play a lot, and maybe this comes back even to shooters, is that we get on the character leveling carousel. And we figure, oh, well, I just leveled up and I finished that level, so I'll just go on to the next level right away. Whereas Diablo, really, there's a good reason to keep going back and replaying at the difficulty level you were in order to build up your gear, get the gear that you wanted, and put together that set that matches your stats, that matches the way you want to play the game.
From what I understand, co-op is a really good way to do that, too, because the gear...
Are you not co-oping?
No, not as much. No,
interesting.
And I want to play through the game first. My big issue with co-op there is, like, you know, I don't want to necessarily replay something or jump ahead of where I'm at, or my friends may not want to come back and replay on normal. Like, I want to get through the game, and I haven't had enough time to play, but I want to get through kind of the story once on my own and see everything. And if a friend wants to play with me, great, but I'm not trying to force anyone to come back to normal where I'm at. And then after I get through kind of that first playthrough and see everything, then I'll just co-op whatever, because I don't really care about the order then or what I'm doing, because it's just more of a dungeon crawl.
I am still really looking forward to playing this after Move-a-Palooza the last couple weeks.
I've been right
so
there with
sick
you.
Of moving.
And the story is excellent. I don't think people talk about it enough. The way they present the story is excellent. And I agree with that statement that you just said, James, but I also love the fact that they don't put any of those restrictions onto you. Like, you are free to have a co-op experience that suits you and your friends. If your friend played 2 extra hours last night and you log on and he's farther along than you, you can still hop into his game. You know, I love that. It really is the best co-op experience I think I've ever had in any game, just because of how easy and awesome it is. As soon as you share that Blizzard ID with someone, it is the easiest, slickest, most seamless.
I love how you constantly get to see and are constantly finding out what your friends are doing over on the side too. Just your friend unlocked this achievement, or they did this. Like, some of those social hooks are so good and just so polished and seamless.
They had enough time to work on it.
Well, they sure did.
I would ask a question about items too as you're advancing, because especially for you, Jeff, who's gotten way far ahead on your one character.
Yeah.
So one of the things that was also in their recent dev blog on where they're going with design refinements and tuning was a note about how items are set up, and there's been evidently some fiery debates on their forums about legendaries not necessarily being legendary, using air quotes, as far as their power.
Right.
And they said this was a very conscientious decision, and it comes down to their design directive to not have a build for each character that is the ultimate build. I mean, Boazon, you were going for Windforce, you know, everything had its like certain high level kit that you wanted to do. And to eliminate some of that, they've made it to where if when you pick up a high-end random, it rolls just right, you will get a random or a randomly generated magical item that's more powerful than a legendary. How do you feel about that?
Well,
I'm kind of torn.
The thing that's the tricky wicket, the sticky wicket in all of this, is how the positioning of the auction house has sort of thrown all of that into chaos, because I totally respect, and I think they're going this way with WoW as well. I totally respect the goal of, we don't want, when you log on to log on to our new game, you go into the forums or you do a Google search and you find out, okay, I'm planning to play class X. What is the build for class X that has been what is it? The Pretentious Bastards? What are they called? The
Min-maxers?
Yeah, but there's that website. I can't remember right now.
But you don't want to go and look at the tree, and it shows you like,
is the one accepted way to play this class.
Right.
If you're not playing at this class, you're not going
to
be maxing.
Sure, there might be three sets of skills, but you need to be in this skill, and you need to follow this tree, and follow it exactly like this, and have this level of these, and then you need to have this gear.
And I think that's what makes Diablo 3 so much fun for me, is I do feel like I can engage some creativity. Now, I have settled on a very effective build for myself in this part of the game, but as I was leveling and unlocking new skills and unlocking new runes, I was always excited to try new things. And, if I stick that rune in there, I'm going to change this skill and that skill too, and just having new builds, and they're all viable. You can settle on something that you like. And I like how items feed into that as well and go, I can get a bonus to this or that. But having said that, it is a little questionable how the auction house makes it now that we don't want there to be just, you know, two things that everybody wants. We want to have a shit ton of things that people want,
right,
so that people spend money. And, you know, gold so far, no real money yet. But I'm curious as to how that's all going to shake out. We were having a big debate about that last night. I was at a screening of Snow White, and there's several guys, and like guys turned around. It was a press screening, and so there was all like nerds there. People, we were, Alex and I were like talking about it, and people were turning around and contributing. And it's going to be really interesting to see how the real money auction house shakes out, because there's going to be obviously there's going to be that big headline story of, you know, man pays $4,000 for fake item in Diablo, but what is the median price of stuff going to be? Where is that all going to sort of filter down to?
We have no idea.
We don't. And it's going to be fascinating to find out.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, and the thing that almost makes it better, too, is, like, you're paying $60 for the amount of content that Diablo gives you and the amount of items and times you can play it and how good the co-op is. Like, it feels like a real bargain after paying $60 for, say, an MMO and then having to pay $10-$15 a month. Like, this really, for as online and as fun and replayable as this game is, I think that's going to make it a lot more palatable to people to go and be like, oh, well, if I want to pay some money in the auction house, I can. If I don't, we can ignore it.
But no, but nobody here sees themselves spending money in the auction house. Real money?
I don't know. I mean, if it breaks out
already hooked.
That was a yes.
Yeah. I'm not going to spend $1,000. I'm not going to spend $100. I'm not going to spend $50. Okay. But if it breaks down to – if it shakes out to the point where it's $2 or $5 for something, I'm like, I can get that fucking – that's a pretty nice-looking axe. I want that. And it's like, and it turns into, like, on my iPhone.
Such a slippery slope.
It is, right? And I guarantee that I'm gonna regret some of those things because I do on my iPhone. I do when it's
that
like,
is the
well,
case
I could just,
study for microtrans, right?
Exactly,
there.
Right?
That's the case study for it. It's why it works.
But right now, I am definitely doing a lot of stuff in the auction house. It's just a gold-based economy.
But I think a lot of people are. And that's partially because blacksmithing is not working out as well. It's another thing they're going to update. They're going to make blacksmithing more relevant because their idea with that was that it's an alternate path that you could take along with you up to final level. So they're going to make the blacksmithing a little more relevant. And like you said, it's going to be interesting to see how it all balances out between virtual currency auction house, real money auction house, blacksmithing, and how those three interact with one another, all because itemization and in the final analysis is really well worked into the game, which goes back to why Hell and Inferno are so hard, is because people are getting a little ahead of themselves character wise and not thinking, oh yeah, I need to like be thinking of leveling my gear up as a whole other part of my character and not just my stats, but I need to be bringing my gear up at the same time.
It was actually funny because I got to a point where I was like, God, like this game suddenly got a lot harder.
Good.
And then I was like, oh shit, I didn't upgrade my weapon and I could get another 60% damage per second. And suddenly it was like, okay, now it's not as hard as it just was. But it was literally, I was like, I just wasn't thinking about upgrading. I hadn't thought about upgrading my weapon for a little bit. And then I looked in my inventory. I'm like, oh shit, that's why it's hard.
Well, it's been, what, a decade since I played Diablo 2. So my memory of it may be a little hazy. But I remember going up into the higher difficulty levels and I don't remember there being this sort of potpourri of attributes assigned to. Did they have that attribute based difficulty stuff? Because
I haven't seen 3's high level, so I'm not exactly sure what you're
doing. Well, these guys have new tags like fast or arcane or.
Yes.
And they throw like 5 or 6 of them on these guys. I mean, I've had minions that are invulnerable. They're just invulnerable.
So what do you do with them?
You have to kill their.
Oh, you kill
their
you
yellow.
Kill the mini boss.
Exactly.
Kill the mini boss to take them down.
Right, but I've run into the minions and not been able to find the mini boss anywhere, and so they just run around with me and just smack me as I'm killing everything else.
It's because the mini bosses they kind of failed off. They're not really up there anymore.
But it's like, come on, invulnerable? Really?
They finally figured it out. They're like, you go hide.
Yeah.
Like.
Or there, I mean, in Hell, I mean, I'm only halfway through Act 1, so I've just basically scratched the surface of Hell. It's kind of a fun turn of phrase. But I've already encountered guys where it's like, I can't beat those guys. Where they have, you know, if they have molten, which means they leave a trail of burning death. Arcane, which means they drop these spinning lasers of death. Fast, which means I can't catch up to them. And vampiric. So as a barbarian, I'm basically a tank. I have tons of life and I can survive a long time and I can
take your life from you
as soon as they hit me, I can't do enough damage to kill them.
Well,
you need
a vampiric weapon.
Well, I need guys who can do damage on my team. I need wizards, I need demon hunters, I need, you know, guys to deal massive amounts of damage, but my girlfriend and I've been playing and she's a monk and I'm a barbarian and we just run into these guys.
She got nerfed.
She did get nerfed.
She got nerfed.
Yeah.
It's terrible when your girlfriend gets nerfed. Sad state of affairs. All right, let's move on from Diablo. I can't believe we dove into Diablo, and there you go. We like rip off and riff on Diablo again.
It's a great game.
So you were talking about multiplayer and how well they do it. And I kind of want to talk about... So I have this thing with multiplayer where I really... like, and I feel like a lot of people have this. I love co-op. I love playing co-op games. And I think that Diablo, from everything I've heard, is going to be a great game for that. I enjoyed the hell out of Borderlands. Really, really had a great time with Borderlands. And I'm playing Ghost Recon Future Soldier. And like... and I'll talk about single player campaign in a minute, which is the way I've been playing it. But it's really, it's surprising me. It's really, it's living up to the spectacle that I thought it would be when I saw it demoed.
Mm-hmm.
It's also all co-op, right? It's co-op throughout. And I find, though, that it falls into the same trap that I had, for instance, with Halo Reach, which is that because of its structure, playing that sort of game in co-op becomes event gaming. And event gaming is not really conducive to anyone with a, you know, schedule past even, like, I mean, even in high school now, you just have so many things going on competing for your time that to play a game like that, it's just not something where you can say, yeah, you know what, this is going to be a 12-hour campaign, and we're going to do it in two-hour sessions, but counting for us failing a few times, we're going to have 8 2-hour sessions over the next... like, who has the fucking time to do that? Right? But yet you want to play it in that way, and you want to play it with your friends. And no one has found the right design hook, for me at least, to play that sort of game experience, a squad-based tactical shooter, whether it be space or modern or past warfare, where I can drop in, get together with a pickup group, have a good game, and it has the right design hooks to keep people playing the right ways to have fun with it. Because inevitably what happens in pickup groups is, you know, someone's fucking off, or they're not playing the game right, or they're just a jerk. And I say that we need to actually have designers figure out how to overcome that, because those are pieces of personality and human behavior that are not, like, you're not going to have that change. That's not going to magically change. Someone's got to get the right design hook to make the game work.
We'll have them. Everybody who creates an Xbox Live account will take a Myers-Briggs personality test.
Right. And, right. It's not going to happen,
yeah,
right?
No, no. It's, well,
but there's something about the Diablo multiplayer, obviously, that makes it really conducive to playing with different groups of friends, different times. And maybe it's just the player population is so high. I'd love to hear what you guys' thought, like, what makes it work and how could you make it work in a different sort of game?
It's kind of a cheat for Diablo as well, because the game is built to be replayed infinitely.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not trying to get people to just go through one time. You're not trying to just get them to experience this campaign as a group or
That's a good point.
It's kind of a cheat in a little bit.
That's interesting because, you know, a game that did for a little period work for me was Rainbow Vegas and Rainbow Vegas 2, mm-hmm. because you had Terrorist Hunt.
Right.
And you could hop into Terrorist Hunts and get pretty good games.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because of that sort of that, you know, you go back and play the same things over and over because it was built to be played that way.
Yeah, I think I had the same feeling with Tribes when I was playing Tribes Ascend, because it's just modular. It's just, you're not on a new map. You're basically doing the same thing. Teamwork seemed to flourish because everybody was trying to accomplish the same thing. And if this one didn't work, I mean, I guess you can have that in any kind of multiplayer arena.
Yeah, so I think Tribes, you sort of slid down there into that multiplayer online shooter space. And I was thinking
squad-based, more tactical stuff.
Something in between, right? Yeah. Because, like, there's this cool campaign to Ghost Recon Future Soldier, and it's really, really an awesome... I mean, I can see how awesome it would be to play with all four of your squad members being real people. You know, you and three buddies. And yet at the same time, to do that in the way the structure of the game is requires such a commitment from everybody's standpoint that that's not a realistic expectation.
Yeah, I mean, it's that, you know,
for a larger group.
Right. Right. And it's always the challenge of how dependent is everyone on each other. And like I said, you think about Diablo, like the game itself, you could jump in at any point with any group and kind of know what you're doing. You're going to wander around and kill stuff and search for things. And
right.
There's a story to it and there's spectacle to it, but the game core gameplay doesn't change that much. There's more layers added to it the farther you go and the harder difficulty. It scales to your difficulty. So if, you know, you can play it alone until your friend shows up, when your friend jumps in, it gets a little bit harder. Suddenly, you know, there's jokes about how you'd be fighting a boss and suddenly it gets really hard because your friend jumps in and it starts wiping you out. So I think like there's all those things. I really think Diablo might have actually perfected it in a lot of ways. I think some of the design challenges you're already talking about might already be addressed in Diablo, and as you play it, you'll see some stuff that's pretty cutting edge in terms of co-op gaming.
So you guys have made a bunch of shooters. Do you see from things that you've looked at in you know, design scrums stuff that would be able to be projected from the way Diablo is done into a shooter situation? Because a lot of that stuff is like, it's relying on ice. Like, first of all, the camera position gives you much more awareness of what's going on.
Yep.
And you're able to see, you know, here's Jeff, he's a barbarian and I can support him by healing him. I know he's got these mobs coming over here. And so
that's a great point, Garnet. That's a great point that I think that just merely in the amount of information you're given of the playing field, your ability to work more as a team is enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
And that when you're limited to a first person point of view, and you know, a lot of different games have tried to convey information of what's going on another part of the map to you in different ways and to varying levels of success. But it's an interesting challenge because you're only given that very limited field of view.
Well, and that's why I look at, like, say, League of Legends or even Super Mundane Combat to an extent. You look at League of Legends, how you always have a map. Like, mm-hmm. you can always see what's going on the entire battlefield, so you always have that situational awareness. And Mundane Combat tries to do the same thing in how it structures its lanes on the top. So I think that's a good point in terms of situational awareness. In terms of what we've learned, I mean, Resistance 2 was sort of – its co-op was very interesting at the time.
Its co-op was
had a great time
unparalleled. Playing. Like, that's never been equaled.
Right. So you took some of those same things, though, like, you know, randomize it up. So make it so it's replayable, you know, scale to the difficulty. So if you don't have certain people or you can change the difficulty level, mm-hmm. Make it so, you know, like I said, it doesn't matter where you're on the story. You can jump in and enjoy it. So I definitely think we saw some of those things.
Well, and the nodality within that to where, you know, you could replay a mission, but it didn't play out the same way
the second time. And, you know, that game definitely was, you know, the first try of anything like that for us. But I think we learned a lot of things about how to do that. We still had our own issues in that we had three classes and it wasn't always clear what you were doing. And first person view makes it a lot harder. Any sort of shooter is going to make it a lot harder to know what's going on around you. You always have that, especially in an action game like that. You're so focused on what you're trying to shoot that the map in the corner showing you where everyone is. How do you account for all that?
Sure.
How do you learn what's going on? And maybe at a certain point you'll be able to have almost like an AI squad commander trying to help tell people where to go.
Well, we've got that game. I mean, we can abstract it. We can abstract this design dilemma out to, for instance, natural selection. We have one person in the group playing the commander who's looking at a real-time strategy like isometric view of the battlefield and directing your troops where to go and what to do. However, now we're back to that very niche, hardcore end of gaming.
Well,
where
see, that's
now
why
you
I think
organized.
That's why I think you don't want that to be a player in some ways. Like, it's almost better if that's the computer looking at the situation and trying to help the players and help coordinate the players.
So that was the idea that Brink wanted to bring in. You know, where Brink had all those smart things would say, "Oh, you need an engineer here," and.
But Brink was almost – unfortunately, Brink was probably too complicated for its own good. Like, maybe if you take that –
And they thought it was simplified.
Oh, no. Not even close, right? It wasn't. And it just wasn't. There's a lot of classes and things. Maybe, though, in that kind of a Ghost Recon environment or a Modern Warfare or a Halo or a game like that where it's not quite as complex, you could actually make something like that work because – maybe if it's boiled down to three classes or even just a few abilities and weapons and, hey, this is what's going on, you might need to go help out, you could design something that would be a lot more interesting. And again, if you design it to be modular and replayable, you could maybe get something kind of interesting going there.
Totally agree, although in all fairness, I think Brink sort of collapsed under it, the fact that its shooting wasn't very good, not necessarily because of the weight of its systems, which were also a little overwrought.
So. Just out of interest, what level of interest did you guys have in Future Soldier?
I had very low.
How come?
To be honest.
It's Ghost Recon. Ghost Recon used to be so good, and then it, like, this thing kind of got lost. And I agree, James or Jeff?
I really would like to play it. It's just a pure matter of how many hours I have to play games versus things like Diablo and Max Payne and the pre-E3 period.
And people saying, like, you and Ozzy seem to like it pretty well. Like people are saying it's worth the time to check out,
definitely,
which is the thing that's bringing me back in, because I have been, I don't know, I guess I kind of burned out on that.
It's pretty fun. I mean,
yeah.
Like, it could be one of those kind of summer slow burn hits, you know, where if enough people kind of get into multiplayer and keep talking it up over the next few weeks, like, it could be something that people start picking up over June and July and getting into.
The tech toys are really fun to play with. I agree with the problem that Ozzy brought up in the review that he did for Shaq, but I think that with some discipline. So there is definitely playing it solo. There is a conscientious decision you have to make to not let the way the game guides you break the game, which is that as you get deeper and deeper into it, you've unlocked all these toys, and you can basically take cover and use your toys to direct your squad and let the squad, and it becomes like a weird, almost strategy, real-time strategy game where you're directing your guys to go do stuff. And then the next thing you know, you've cleared areas and you just pop back into first person and run across them. And that's not really that fun.
Right.
And so you have to conscientiously think, okay, I'm not going to break the game. I'm going to use my toys to support me. And I'm going to think the way a soldier would, which is that if I'm under heavy fire and I put a drone up, I might put the drone up for a minute and see what's around. But then I'm going to come back and like pull my gun out and look around because I'm afraid I'm going to get shot.
Right.
And the shooting in it is good. And you know, they do a lot of cool things with thermal imaging and magnetic imaging. And like, I had the craziest fight inside a full-on dust storm. And they were doing some really cool things like having the gun move around in my hand in time with the sound of the wind gusts that were coming through. So I really had a really very, very, you know, immersive experience in it.
Now, can you actually play any of the missions like Ghost, like super stealth? Like you get in, you're, you know, cap a bunch of guys stealthily, get out without anyone ever knowing you're there.
So okay, what so I really like about good. This game, and if you followed, you know, me for a long time, you know that I'm sort of iffy on stealth games that are be detected and fail.
Right.
This game is very much about being silent to be deadly and being silent to gain a tactical advantage. And it's very fun. You very much feel like the Ranger team that, you know, Obama sent in to go take out some Taliban organization, but you're doing like all these crazy operations because you are silent, but you are not like, you're not Sam Fisher. You are not hiding. Right. You are maximum aggression, but being very quiet, very secretive, using some cool devices. And then they do a lot of really cool semi-cinematic things. For instance, if you're rescuing a hostage, they have a couple of sequences they've used where you're holding the hostage to help extract them, but also fighting your way out with one hand up using your gun. And so you're moving, and it's sort of it's semi on rails,
right?
Because you don't have the left right, but you're using the stick to control how fast you move through the space and aiming and taking out enemies who are trying to get at you and protecting the guy. Some really cool stuff that goes on. I would say very surprised with it. It's very fun. Interested to see how the co-op does. I want to play some multiplayer online too.
I definitely want to check it out now.
Wow, that was a very quick first segment. It was a very, very quick first segment.
You're awake.
I know, I'm awake now. Well, I got excited. I got enough coffee in me or something. Sorry, folks. I've been like burning the candle on both ends. Anyway, we are going to take a little break. When we come back on the other side, I am going to I promise we'd get into other stuff, but I want Jeff Kanata, who's played a little more Dragon's Dogma, to talk about that some, because there have been a tremendous number of you who've been asking us about Dragon's Dogma. And so, yeah, we'll do that. And then we'll get ready for E3. Stick around. We will be right back. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook to consider is Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. That's audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. Gotta say, I do actually, I don't know anything about the, you know, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter idea, but it sounds hilarious.
And just it's going to be face a movie this summer.
Just so. On the face of it. Famous director, who's the director behind it?
Oh, I'm on the spot and I can't remember. But yeah, it's a...
And we're going to look so... Someone's like, oh my God, I can't
How
believe
you
guys.
How do you not
guys.
Remember oh, this? I don't know.
That's not exactly we're my video job game guys, or anything.
Dumbos.
I love documentaries.
All right, so...
Wait, why are you laughing?
It's totally realistic... Also up there, George Washington, X-Files.
I was on my TiVo, and it said that Borgias
versus the zombies.
It said the Borgias was a docudrama, and I was like, what? Really? Bullshit. Yeah, come on, Showtime. Docudrama my ass. I'm like, well, historical drama, maybe.
Using the term incredibly loosely.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, Mr. Kanata, if we could tear you away from... Don't worry about it. It's fine. You've already...
The guy who directed Wanted and Night Watch and Day
Watch. Oh, that's right.
Did you guys see Night Watch and Day Watch? They're awesome.
Yeah, they're good.
Night Watch is what episode one should have been. It's a kid getting turned to the dark side in a completely believable way. Anyway,
how about the Skyrim DLC video?
Oh, I know, right? How rad is that?
Looking good.
Am I led to believe that I will be able to fly if I'm a vampire?
Or at least why are you being led? What makes you think you're going to be able to be a vampire? You're fighting them. No, you are the Dawn Guard.
No, the narration in that's like choose your side. Be one of the
and there's a shot of like a guy in third person view with wings flapping.
Yeah, I thought that was the boss you'd have to kill.
I don't know. Maybe
I don't know. It doesn't look like he's. It's probably more like penguin wings.
Can I be a vampire if I'm already like, a werewolf?
Yes.
Nice.
It's fine. Why not? It's a video game. You don't have to chime. That video though, by the way, is one of those things that it's like I see stuff like that, and that's the kind of crap that pulls me back to trying to play Skyrim.
It's a great game.
I know, and you probably finished the main quest, didn't you?
Yeah.
Like, that's the and the thing about Dawnguard.
I didn't finish everything like I wanted to.
But. And what I see about their DLC packs is that you know they've built this giant world, and you have to have had the big game to have this. But now it feels like they have a contained story within there, and you know it's not going to be as expansive as the main quest of the game. You know it's not going to be as much open ended stuff, so it feels much more digestible. You know?
Well, didn't Oblivion had that with the
Oblivion had it? Yeah. No, I think that's one of the things they do that's really cool, and that's why people like. Once you've invested in the time and the world, then the DLC comes along and it really is the frosting on the cake because now you really get to enjoy all that you invested in the character, all you invested in the world in a more tightly knit story that like really comes together. And the monsters and stuff in there looked awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of open world RPGs.
Yes.
Dragon's Dogma is actually pretty darn good.
That's the scoop. Yeah. Everyone who's been playing it is loving it.
Here's the thing about it. It's the best thing about it is the ideas, the new things that it brings to the table. The combat system is really clever and interesting and different.
It's not just Demon Souls?
No. No, you have these follower dudes.
The pawns. Right. Yeah. So the combat system, including the pawns. I thought you meant the physics-based, like, getting in there, trading blows and...
Well, yeah, no, how it all works together as far as... It's really sort of a team-based thing, and you need guys that complement your class, and they level up, and you give them things, and you work together with them, and you can trade them in and out, and... It's really clever how all that comes together and how you use your skills and how you level up your skills and how, like, there's a certain classes that are available. There's only three classes at the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, like, deeper classes that you can trade up later by spending discipline on.
I had it on the stack. I'm just sort of reticent to get drawn into it.
And there's this whole mechanic of grabbing. It lets you grab any item in the world. Well, not any item, but any... grabbable item in the world. So you can like walk around and grab a pot and pick it up on your shoulder or grab a body, a person, pick them up on your shoulder. But
why would I want to do that?
Well, I'm getting to that.
Make a wall of bodies. Of course.
During combat, you can grab an enemy
and carry them on your shoulder.
No. Oh. You can grab an enemy and put them in like a headlock or not a headlock, but like a
full Nelson. Body
full Nelson. Oh, okay. And your buddy will stab him in the chest. And your followers will frequently do that for you. So like, hey, I got him. Get him now. And then so it does like extra damage when you...
Do you have to teach your followers that move?
No, they kind of get...
Because one of the things that's cool about the pawns is that they learn from their experiences.
Right. And they learn...
Have you loaned any out to someone else on the internet?
No, I haven't done that.
Because that is one of the really out there sort of cool ideas is that you can take one of these pawns that you've created, put them... How does that work? Do you put them in like an open... where they can go be borrowed?
Well, the whole narrative of the game is built around these stones that summon the pawns from some other dimension. And it's kind of weird. They're called pawns. They're like not quite human, but you personalize them and have relationships with them. But they're like, I'm a pawn. I'm here to do your bidding. It's weird, but kind of cool. And you can not only train them up in combat skills, but they learn more about the world that they're hanging out in and quests, and so like they can become more knowledgeable. They'll be like, I'm knowledgeable about this area, and it's like, oh, that's good.
Does that actually help you in the game?
Well, the sort of downside,
they don't get
of this,
stuck on the environment as much. That
lowers the collision detection,
yeah, exactly. I've learned better pathfinding,
yeah, exactly.
No, the sort of downside of this whole thing is that they don't shut the hell up, chatty Cathys, dude. And I mean, it's helpful stuff, but it's always like,
there's nothing worse than a pawn you pay for by the hour that won't shut up.
Maybe they have to learn to shut up.
Yeah, you have to train them in quiet time.
Just slap them a few times.
Shut your face when you're talking.
We're playing
to
a
me.
Game. It's called Who Can Wait the Longest Before Talking.
Mute.
Yeah, mute. But I mean, they're always like yelling stuff like, I think this way leads to our destination. oh, these flowers will be helpful, you know? And they'll gather shit for you and without you having to ask them to. It's kind of cool. It's like, it'll be like, you know, Ted got some kindling.
Ted.
Well, you can name him, too.
Is that what you come up with, Ted?
Actually, mine's a female, and I named her Biatch.
Because you're a sensitive guy.
Because I'm a sensitive guy. But then it also, because you can share online, you not only have to name them, you know, with filling out whatever name you want, but there's
like
also
a birth certificate.
But there's also like a list of acceptable names that other people will see, so they don't act, because you can't call them, you know,
right,
horrible things.
Biatch.
Yeah. So you have to fill out these acceptable names as well. So I think her name is like Puppy Legs or something.
Puppy Legs.
Puppy Legs.
I don't remember.
Bitch Puppy Legs.
Something like that.
Wow.
Anywho, it's a really clever mechanic, and there's a lot of interesting stuff. The detractor for this game is how just bad it looks.
Bad?
I mean, it looks fine.
I thought it looked pretty good when I saw it.
It looks fine. It just feels a little muddy and blurry, and it doesn't pop. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason I love these games – listen, nobody's going to say that Skyrim is like this brilliant rainbow of color, but – it was at least interesting and full of detail, and I feel like the world of this game, any kind of, you know, open world exploration game, part of what I'm in for is wondering what's around the next bend.
Of course. Yeah.
And this game, the monsters are cool, and you're fighting, like, right away, you're fighting monsters that are gigantic and have really interesting things. Oh, that's another thing in the combat in this game is, not only do you have grab, where you can just grab a guy and put him into a half Nelson, you can grab onto giant enemies and like hold onto the mane of a lion or something.
Oh, that's cool.
And like crawl up its
like
back
Shadow
and
the Colossus?
Stab it. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Or like try to
so
grab
So this is
on.
Not really very Dark Souls. I just really get the feeling this was them trying to make a Dark Souls game.
Well, it's reminiscent of it in a slight way, in the sense that you have like a block with your bumper and you have, you know.
I mean, does it have a story component to it that's
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's a big story, huge role-playing story, yeah.
Huh.
Is it hard like Dark Souls?
No.
So it's not a. It's in a very accessible game.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Hmm. It just feels a little unpolished. It feels a little janky from time to time. It feels a little bit rough around the edges and just kind of blurry and bland. And I wish I was more engaged with the world, because there's so much to like about it. It really is
enough that you'd be hopeful for a sequel.
Yeah, absolutely. Or people ripping off some of the stuff and making a. You know, I mean, seriously.
Right. Or a proper sequel.
And honestly, if Diablo hadn't come out, I probably would have been really invested in this game and put in 50 hours into it. It's my kind of game. It's got enough interesting, unique stuff about it. The world is full of detail, and there's tons of quests and side quests. And it would have been a thing that would have drawn me in if I wasn't already completely enraptured with another game.
Cool. So. You're probably playing it on your Amazon Instant Video box.
You mean my Microsoft TM home entertainment console?
Yes. So we're getting ready to let's get ready for E3. Let's dive into it. Let's start off with Microsoft here. And what the hell is going on with them in the first place? There is a post on their, you know, there's been a lot of speculation that they're going to be very feature and service driven in their messaging at E3, that's going to be a big focus of their press conference. And I'll just start the discussion with this post that their marketing director made on one of their tech blogs that says, "To date, our success with Xbox has been led by a box in the living room. Moving forward, Xbox will go beyond the box to reach all new families of devices. Just as Xbox has grown to mean more than games, it also is more than just a console. This year, Xbox becomes the premium entertainment service for Microsoft. Whether on your PC, tablet, TV, or phone, Xbox will be a gateway to the best in music and video, your favorite games, and instant access to your friends. With the launch of Windows 8, we'll bring Xbox entertainment to everyone. With Xbox on Windows 8 devices, we rapidly accelerate the reach of Xbox entertainment from more than 60 million people to hundreds of millions of people worldwide. We understand that entertainment has become a multi-screen experience, where you and your friends are watching TV, listening to music, and playing games while interacting with your tablets and phones in new ways. We've got ideas for making all the entertainment you love more personal, interactive, and social across the devices you love and on phenomenal Windows 8 devices that are yet to come."
It only took them a decade to deliver on the promise of... Yeah. So this is the thing that they were talking about when the first Xbox came out.
They figured out how to make Xbox awesome with killer games, and it's like they have finally just completely done exactly what we thought they would do originally to fuck it up.
Well, I don't know if that's fucking it up. I think that's a little bit drastic of a conclusion to draw. No?
I am not optimistic for them in this strategy.
Why?
Because they're not Apple and they'll get it wrong.
And well, I don't know. I thought like Windows Phone 7 and a lot of those things showed they were kind of moving in the right direction.
7.5 with the update made some progress. Ask Nokia how it worked out for them.
I don't understand.
They're also RANs. And they're trying to like what made Xbox great was they really connected with making a great game console, and they did do it right, and they effectively came in and showed Sony, who was and I realize Nintendo is in their own world, is a great gaming platform, but they really showed Sony and Sony fans that hey, we can build a platform and we can give developers great support and it can have great games.
Does that go away?
I don't see where that's going away. I hear so many people talk about like so many people excited about Amazon coming in, and Amazon's been on PS3 for a while, but so many people excited about Amazon coming. You always hear about people using their Xbox for Netflix or for ESPN or for HBO Go. So, I mean, I think they see that there is a lot of people who play games are also going to do a lot of other things, and a lot of people want to include their friends in those things or include their friends in maybe watching HBO Go. I don't know.
There's lots of ways to do those things.
Right. I just think they have look at how good Xbox Live is.
By the way, I think Netflix on PS3 better than on Live.
Probably. Yeah, I think the app is probably better.
And same thing goes for Amazon. Except they need to add the queue thing. I haven't checked and see, but there is actually sort of a watch list now on the Xbox version. Finally. But still, because they're forced into following the Metro so that they can do Kinect integration, you still get these sloppy UIs that just are not fun to navigate.
I guess my point is, I think they see that whole social experience that they've created on their box is really powerful, and reading this post. I think they want to see how they can continue to expand on that. I don't see how that's necessarily a bad thing, and I also don't see how that would prevent them from making good games in the future.
It doesn't prevent them.
Or prevent them from making a box that allows people to make good games in the future.
But what it says to me is that they're back to trying to be Microsoft and that they've lost the point. And what I think was successful about Xbox is that division was dedicated with a purpose to be putting them into the gaming space and to do it really well. And now they've done that, and they turn around, and now they want to integrate that box back into Microsoft, which by its very nature seems to be diluting it into just a cog in the Windows 8 machine. And I'm not confident they can do that well.
I think there's another way of looking at this to say that they've sort of hit the ceiling of what a home console can do. They're still going to give you your Halos. They're still going to give you your Calls of Duty. They're going to, you're not going to be without those games. It's not like, oh, all of a sudden these don't work on my box anymore. But now they're taking this and going, okay, you've got this console in your plugged into your television. We've got a hell of a lot of people playing games on this thing, but all the other sides of the industry are branching out into, mobile gaming, all these other ways that. Facebook, all these other interconnected ways that people access entertainment, why not break this box out into those areas as well?
Right. Maybe I'm not communicating well. I think the thing that stands out to me about this is them saying that Xbox goes outside the box. Because Xbox was their gaming platform, and there was a certain degree of integrity to, wow, we have a strong gaming arm. We have a strong gaming presence that we're doing by staying like that. But now they're talking about Xbox is the premium entertainment service for PC, tablet, and phone. It's got music. It's got video. But they have Zune. And I think Zune sort of shows how they made something that was good, but then they sort of just fooled around with it so much that even though they had something that was good, they weren't able to follow through
but
on
Zune
it.
Zune never hit that critical mass like Xbox has.
And they never gave it a chance to.
Well, okay, so you can cry over Zune or you can say, hey.
I'm not crying over it. I'm saying I don't want to see Xbox go down the Zune path.
Well, I think it already hasn't. They're capitalizing.
I think they're just getting set to send it down the path.
Well, I don't see what's terribly different. Like, Microsoft has Games for Windows Live on PC. You can earn achievements through that. No, and not to say that that's as polished as the Xbox experience is, but that could be better. But that's, you know, there's your PC. You have, you know, Windows 8 phone and you can, or Windows 7 phones, and you can play games and earn achievements on that and log into Xbox Live. So, I mean, you already have seen that this is not really describing anything that new. It's just saying they're still committed to the strategy of, you know, bringing that long term. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe you could look at it, you could see that there are pitfalls in the strategy of expanding beyond games, but it could work out really well too. No one's really going to know until you see more of the strategy and we see what they're planning at their press conference. But I feel like people are really excited about the current stuff like Netflix, ESPN, HBO Go. So, and you know, all the other things they can get on their console. Like, you have a box hooked up to your TV in your living room. Having more things to do in that box is awesome.
Yeah, it's cool, but to a certain degree, like, as a gamer, I read something like this and I'm like, all right, so, you know, like that integrated stuff is great, but I want to know, are you guys going to be putting out software in the next, or towards, until the end of the console's life cycle that I'm actually going to be interested in?
You don't think there's going to be a part of that at the conference as well?
Oh, no, there will be. But this particular, like, I just don't feel like I'm the target audience for this message. Like, it's for the, I don't know, maybe the person that's sitting on the fence that doesn't have a home game console yet.
Here's another way of coming at this. So I get accused.
I like that person who's like, you know what, I'm just going to keep waiting.
Yeah, just wait it out until the next generation.
A few more years.
I don't get it. That's why
I haven't decided. PS3 or Xbox 360. My PS2 is biting the death. I need to upgrade.
Yeah,
to
I've been
generation.
Watching this market for about 5 years now. I'm almost ready to make a decision.
I need another $50 price point, and then I'm jumping in.
I mean,
that truly happens, though.
I know.
For the purposes of good discussions, I oftentimes take different points of views to try to get the discussion moving down the road. And so here's where I'm coming at from this. I'm coming at this in my gamer's brain. My tech brain, my tech side of my personality, sure, I love all these things and I use my devices, I've actually gotten to the point now, because there's parity, where whatever the last device I was using on the screen is, that's probably what I use. So if I was playing my PS3 last, then I watch Netflix on my PS3. If I was playing my 360 last.
Ain't that the truth?
It's harder for me
to change inputs than anything else.
It's
in
gotten
my
that simple.
Friggin' life.
Do you guys not have a freaking Harmony remote?
Like, no, I
you
do.
Press one button.
I do, but it's like,
no, I don't.
For
button,
fuck's sake. Like, this is 2012. Like, we make remotes that allow this to be very, very simple.
So, that having been said, here's where I was going with this.
Lazy fuckers.
I hate changing inputs. It's my least favorite thing.
As the platform holders, I would really like to be excited about something they were doing in the gaming space as well.
You will be.
I'll be excited for Halo 4 and for Gears 4 and for Forza 5.
Right.
And that's fine, except Microsoft is just like, they're putting so much energy into other things that there's nothing.
What is Kinect to you? Like, Kinect
was
like this.
I was just going
to
say the same thing.
This gigantic change in the way you could control and play video games. Maybe that's not for you particularly, but that was a gigantic, gigantic investment in
and a huge
new way to play.
Yeah.
Dude, if you're really successful for them.
And if you're totally into dance games or.
No, I agree.
Like, it's the applications are so.
That's bullshit. Like, yes, dance games have sold a lot, but like, there's still Disneyland, there's the Sesame Street game, there's Star Wars, and some of those games may be better than others.
There's Disneyland and Sesame Street. Okay.
Okay, so you're like,
you're giving me Halo 4, I want that. Yeah, you're giving me Call of Duty, I want that. Yeah, you're giving me Gears of War.
And even then, the Kinect's introduced thing, like, you know, the voice commands in Mass Effect were awesome. But I'm just saying, like, you're still talking about what is now a six-year-old, is it seven-year-old box this year? Jesus Christ, the seven-year-old.
Seven-year-old box, yeah.
Like, that is a ancient PC.
They've done a phenomenal job of defying the decline usually associated with hardware
generations.
And
since everyone has announced that they're not talking about next-gen, like, if you're talking about, how can we get more value out of your current box? Because it's pretty probably much tapped out power-wise. You're going to see some games that are going to – I think Halo is probably going to look beautiful and it's probably going to look better than anything you've seen given the talent that they have working on that game. But, you know, really, like, compared to, you know,
how good – As a gamer, I really want to see – save that shit for CES. I think it's awesome. I think it's cool. I want to see games. Yeah. I want to see games.
Why?
And I want to see games
Why
and more
take
games.
It to CES? This is
because
the highlight of what a – Nah, I don't know. There's a lot of people sitting in that room. Yes, the fanboys at home, but a lot of the investors and other people that are wanting to see how that product's going to work. And even the press to some regard and some of the more mainstream press, getting ESPN on the Xbox is a much bigger deal than, you know, it seems to maybe folks that only care about the games.
But and wouldn't it be a bigger impact at CES?
I don't know a single person that buys an Xbox to watch Netflix or because it has ESPN on it. Or
they buy it to play Halo 4, right, which they're going to be showing.
Or any,
but it's not like Halo's not going to be there.
This is like, dude, check out all the peripherally cool stuff we're doing with our console.
They didn't get there by being safe.
But like, look, there's going to be an entire week where every single gigantic AAA game, every single one that you see
on your forehead
from third parties is coming out on the Xbox. All of them.
Mm-hmm.
They have a first party that is making Halo.
Mm-hmm.
What else do they need?
Let me go to one other thing about these press conferences, too, that I think sometimes Microsoft takes a little bit of flack for, is they do spend time on some of these other items, but they also are the only one out of the three that has really one place to focus on. They have the Xbox. Right. You go to a Sony press conference, you have PS3. Before, you even had PS2 sometimes standing there, or PSP, now Vita. Yeah. Like, they have a lot more room to spread themselves out and be like, okay, we're going to do some hardcore PS3 stuff. Now we're going to show some second party, a little business. Here's some Vita, back to PS3. You know, Microsoft has Xbox, and they have 60 to 90 minutes to fill from Xbox. And I've always actually appreciated, they'll open that thing up and run through five demos in a row and be like, bam, 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 bam. Here's five big games coming out on our platform, and then eventually they get into the other stuff. And I think that's always where they lose people, is because everyone's waiting for Halo or something at the end, and you have to sit through 30, 40 minutes of maybe stuff that appeals to the larger audience, whether that's a dance game or Sesame Street or the ESPN guys coming out there. But I really do think, considering how much time they have for the one platform, one focus, they don't, you know, maybe they appear to have, you know, oh man, Microsoft always spends so much time on these services and stuff. I just think they have the benefit of only having that focus on one area, whereas you go to the Nintendo, like Nintendo has to spend that middle time on the DS, or Sony has to spend it on the Vita.
Maybe here's part of what sparked this for me, and I'm gonna really set myself up to be bashed on this one, is I think that there is a better than 50-50 chance that Halo 4 crashes and burns.
What?
I think that there's a better than 50-50 chance that Halo 4 crashes
and burns.
Does
that have to do with like people leaving the project?
No, I think that I think that they've just set themselves up for such a difficult comparison, and there's so much.
Do you think that's more based on the quality of the game or the release date of the game?
Release date of the game, and the way it's been positioned now to be 343 out Haloing Bungie, and I just don't know that they can do that. And I'm not saying that they don't have the capability, because they have a powerhouse studio set up there. I'm saying that I don't know that you could make a game, because there's so much sentimentality that even Bungie in Reach and in ODST was having a hard time living up to those crushing expectations from 1, 2, and 3. And now 343 having to do it, it's just a really, really, really tough situation. Really tough situation. And I don't even know, I would have to bust it down to see how Activision steered Call of Duty and Modern Warfare and the Call of Duty offshoots through this, but they seem to have navigated that better. And maybe it's because of the frequent release schedule and because of the different developers and just sort of diffusing some of that.
Some of that is, I don't think it's I think it's easier to tell a Call of Duty story. Like a Halo story has a lot, there's a lot more pressure on the story.
Definitely.
And the universe has to hold up a little bit. You know, you have to be a little bit more careful, because people are probably a lot more invested in Halo's universe than they are in Call of Duty's universe.
And I guess maybe I'm also projecting some of my Star Wars fears. It's like, you had the great first three Star Wars. I mean, could this be the Phantom Menace? Could Halo 4 be the Phantom Menace?
Here's what I'll say. You might be right. I don't think you will be, but you might be right. But I don't think you're going to know after E3. I think whatever 343 brings at E3
is going to fucking
blow people
away. I agree with you. They haven't
showed the campaign to this point. Whatever they're going to show is the best fucking thing in the game. They've saved the best thing in the game, and they're going to play
card. Maybe penultimate. I don't know if they'll go to the top.
Second best thing. Whatever. They are going to blow people away. Now, whether or not the final game does that, what they do in the next 6 months will determine a lot of what you're thinking, how it's going to go.
And I'm saying actually that I think they could build a game that would blow people away, and based off when it's coming out and where the expectations are and people's emotionalism and ties back to Halo, that it could still be a miss. and that would be like so that would be a colossal.
It could be a 90 plus Metacritic, but then just not sell. What and that would be your miss, is what you're saying.
And maybe even it sells, but it just doesn't have the Halo mystique to it. It doesn't build the next platform on which to build the next Xbox and Halo advancement from. And they don't have anything else in the chamber because Microsoft's strategy is so built on delivering services and being an all-in-one box, and they're just relying on these big pillars that they've had around now for a while, they got there by taking a little risk, by being a little bit challenging, by doing something new and original.
Well, okay, here's what I will say. I wish they were more like Sony in the sense that they would be putting out things like Journey and Heavy Rain and those kinds of games. But where we're seeing that innovation, where we're seeing that energy spent is on Kinect. That's where those types of projects
are. That's not entirely true. I mean, like Bastion, Limbo, like there's some really fucking good stuff that comes out on XBLA.
There's a bit
too.
Of a difference there, but these are games that are published on XBLA, not games that are being published by Microsoft onto XBLA.
But those both, I don't know about Bastion.
Journey is a Santa Monica studio.
Okay, but Limbo is Microsoft Game Studios. Limbo is published by Microsoft Game. I'm just saying, their XBLA, first party XBLA group, publishes quite a few games. And, you know, I think sometimes Sony gets well-deserved credit, but I think sometimes they get, like some of those games that come out on MGS, you don't realize that Microsoft actually publishes them, and I don't know if they've done they may not have done the best job at times branding that as a first-party
game. And let's be honest, like very many of the PSN games that we think of as artistic and critical darlings didn't really sell that well, so, you know, they're not really financial successes either, and I'm sure Microsoft looks at that as well. All right, so to sum up, what are expectations? What would be a hit for Microsoft at the show and out of the conference?
Well, I mean, it's all going to rely, I think, on Halo 4. Like that, it really comes down to that carrying their conference in a lot of ways. The Gears game is sort of a surprise, I think, and it'll be interesting to see what that is.
I'm betting based on the box art shot that they revealed that it might be a prequel, just because you see a guy in cuffs, he starts
a lot of
the first
people talking
game
about that
in jail. You know,
it seems to fit the storyline in the universe that they've revealed.
Yeah, it would be nice to have a couple of surprises. I think that would bolster. I mean, everybody's expecting Halo, so if they just come with Halo and everything else is sort of, you know, ho hum. Here's Call of Duty. Here's Assassin's Creed. Here's whatever.
Well, Black Ops obviously will be.
I mean,
one
Black
of the
Ops is going to look good. Assassin's Creed looks amazing.
Assassin's Creed looks fantastic.
Like they're going to have good looking. They're going to have a shit ton of good looking games. But really, what's going to sell you that box is that main thing. And their main thing for them this year has to be Halo. It has to be their big game. So really, that will determine, you know, how good that press conference is. If that game blows you away, like we all think it's going to.
I'm sticking my guns. Grand Theft Auto 5 will be their trailer hero, and they'll have another spend for expensive DLC exclusivity.
I hope you're right.
Are they going to let that overshadow Halo? I don't know.
Would it overshadow? Having two, you got to have something else, and that would be another one. And
you split them up far enough in the show, you put Grand Theft Auto early and Halo late or whatever.
And the wild card is Resident Evil 6.
That game could be interesting.
That's the wild card.
I'm looking forward to seeing it, certainly.
All right, when we come back on the other side of this break, we will dive into PlayStation and, the power of PlayStation, because we got to do that, got to do it, Jack. Power of PlayStation when we come back. Back and ready to rip right into the power of PlayStation. Don't be distracted, folks, here partway through when Mr. Kanata has to depart to go back to do his play.
Yeah, last rehearsal before we open, which would be tonight for you guys. Yes,
getting naked. Congrats. Okay, so big Sony event again. I really liked the way they changed the event up last year. They moved to a great facility, have fantastic access to the games and hands-on at the end of it. Was a pretty strong presentation outside of, I mean, I would say, no offense, Lakers fans. I know you all love him and had a disappointing season. Kobe trying to play basketball last year was sort of a real slowdown. But other than that, I thought they had a really nice, strong. Do you remember that?
No, I actually was. It was great because I was in the green room with Marcus Smith, our creative director. We did a demo, and I messed with our marketing director at Insomniac. I was sending him texts telling him we were hanging out with Kobe in the green room, and he had decided last second not to go into the back and watch it from the stands. And so we totally had him going for about an hour, thinking that we had been hanging out with Kobe Bryant backstage. It was awesome. Hysterical. So good. He was so pissed off.
So I think they're going to have a great presentation again because Vita is here now. There's no more, like, we're not going to be caught up about pricing, but it's been a little slow. I think they're going to try very hard to punch that up, and I think that that's going to rest a lot on how they introduce its connectivity options with the PlayStation 3, which clearly from some of the hints we've been getting and seeing in the PSN games that have been announced, you know, this notion of creating a save while you're playing on one of them and then moving over to the other device and continue your play. Transferring is a big deal. And especially when you consider that this is sort of, I think to me, one of the things that looking at the Vita was, wow, this would be really cool. Like, it'd be cool if I could take my games with me.
Sure.
As that could be the great way to help pick this thing up. So I'll open the door to you guys about, what do you think about what's going to be on display at Sony? We actually know a lot of what the first party stuff is. Obviously, there's, what are you chuckling about?
Go ahead.
There's Ariel's game, of course, which I'll leave to you guys to discuss, lest I get in trouble on that, which is a battle royale.
Right.
There's
Last of Us.
There's Last of Us, which looks
gonna be big,
ridiculous. Yep. Looks amazing.
Yep.
And then there's Kratos.
Yep.
It's pretty good lineup.
That's a pretty good lineup. That's a pretty good lineup. By the way, Last of Us, new IP.
Yeah. And it looks great.
Sony's had a good history on introducing a big IP late in their generations. God of New War IP, itself was
exciting. I'm enthusiastic. I mean, I guess
it's a sequel to Naughty Dog.
I feel like I was being a little railly about Microsoft, but I would love to see them just have one, you know, like one creative outlet in game studio at Microsoft that was fostering that side of it, so that, you know, I felt like that side of the game business was rich there, as rich as it is at Sony, where obviously they have this history of supporting all these games. I mean, bully for them for at least championing games like Last Guardian for as long as they have. God knows what the hell is going
to
happen.
But don't
with
you think that the equivalent to that, I was trying to make this point clumsily earlier, but the equivalent to that is sort of Dance Central. Or, like, the equivalent to that is, like, hey, look how daring we are in this other thing.
Dance
for this
Central is my Last Guardian, I'm going to stick with the Last Guardian team all the way.
I'm not arguing that. I'm not. Come on. Don't put that voodoo on me, Billy Bobby.
What is his name? Ricky Bobby?
Yeah, Ricky Bobby. What the fuck? I fucked that up. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is, that is to that as the other is to that. You know what I'm saying? Where that energy is being spent.
That's my point.
And it's not being spent for you because you are not that target. But
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And Dance Central, you know, Sony has a lot more. They have a lot more studios than Microsoft does. They have a lot more resources in terms of developing stuff. So I don't know. It's entirely fair to compare them. They approach that as a different business model because Microsoft, you know, says Harmonix, will you develop this dance game for us?
Microsoft has a lot more money and has a lot more.
Look at Sony's financial situation versus theirs. So Sony can rely, fortunately, on the fact that they have a lot of headcount working on this stuff. Microsoft can rely on the fact that they have a big bank account. So it's sort of an interesting. I don't know. It's hard to compare the two because the situations are so dramatically different between the two companies.
Yeah. All right. So what do you expect out of Sony? What are you guys looking forward to? What do you want to see?
I can't wait to see Last of Us, honestly. And I know, you know, I'm sure they're going to show something new that people haven't seen yet. And I can't wait to see what it is because, I mean, I guess really outside of the kind of cinematic trailer they showed, no one's really seen that game running besides the E3 judges and Game Informer. So it's kind of exciting to actually know we're going to finally see this thing next week.
Yeah, remember they showed the mansion scene from Uncharted last time, and then they showed like the airfields, and you were like, wow, wow, look at this. And if they can pull off a similar sort of demo experience for Last of Us, which I think is a pretty reasonable expectation.
Do you think they're going to be pushing three dizzles like they did last year?
How do you mean pushing? Do I suspect that they'll have glasses in the theater and show it in 3D?
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that'll be kind of a key point of...
Of course. Yeah. I think that's a corporate edict for them.
They still want to sell some 3D TVs because the entire corporation needs to sell 3D TVs. I don't know. I mean, I don't really know. It's sort of weird because most of the time I'm kind of in the know on the whole press conference thing. But this year we're not a part of it. And so it's sort of weird coming into the Sony press conference as an observer this year more than anything else because I really have no idea. At this point, you know, we've seen breakdowns and gone through rehearsals and all that jazz. And it's kind of being strange being in the dark.
But cool.
But cool. Imagine, it'll be more like Christmas morning now, seeing that stuff.
So knowing all those things are in place, do we think that Sony has been just tipping its hat and is going to come through and reinforce all those pieces? Or do you expect there are going to be some surprises? And if so, what are those surprises?
Well, I'm thinking there'll be a couple of surprises.
God of War 3 is not going to be a surprise per se. But four. Yes.
And it's not really
called
four.
It's called
It's called
Ascension. Is it Ascension?
No.
Revengeance. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's Rising.
Transference or something. I'm super excited about that based on the multiplayer demo that I saw. Mm-hmm. I think I think people are going to look at it and be sort of fall in love with it all over again, like they always do, because it looks great and the gameplay is great. And the multiplayer is going to be like, oh, really? Wow, really? You know, people are going to go in skeptical and go, oh, this might actually really work and be really fun and new and different. So
I think I'm actually more curious about what the Vita has like coming, because it's, you know, PS3, it feels like the roadmap is relatively there. Like maybe Last Guardian could show up and surprise us all.
That'd be
maybe
awesome.
There's a surprise game coming, you know, that we don't know about.
I do have an appointment with them for unannounced AAA title. So I don't know what that
is. I have that also.
Yeah.
So that's good. So there's probably a surprise.
And I can tell you, even as a job, I don't know what that is. It literally is unannounced title.
Yeah. So that's exciting.
That's cool.
Exciting when that shows up on your schedule.
So, but even if there's a surprise there, it would be fun to see. I think I'm more curious because I really don't know what the hell is coming on Vita. Like that, I feel like I don't know what the roadmap is. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the software roadmap is for this fall. I don't know what the big game is that are coming for Vita, because Resistance just came out from Nihilistic, and it's kind of like, okay, what's next? I'm trying to think through what they've shown, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to play next on my Vita, and I've got this awesome piece of hardware that, you know, I'd like some more games for. So I think I'm kind of actually most excited to see that. And like you said, the whole cross-play thing is sort of interesting too, because that's been somewhat underused, but when it is used well, like with the MotorStorm or even MLB The Show has like some interesting stuff, it could be really, really killer feature. Like I would love... Yeah. You know, I would absolutely love to be able to like take my college football season and be able to play a game of college football when I'm not in the house and import that back to my Dynasty Online. Like there's stuff like that I think would be amazing.
And cool like pricing info on that would be a real coup too, if they were like, you know, here's a strategy that we've got for Vita for cross play, you know, where we're going to push this out into the marketplace at, you know, you get this with this, or you know, $10 more, you get the Vita version.
So what would you? How much would you pay? What do you guys think is a reasonable price point for a PS3 Vita bundle?
That's a great. I'm glad you asked that
question. Because I mean, are people going to pay $80, $40, $70?
No, you know, I think that's $100. A bit much. I think like $10 or $15 more is probably
if it's only digital download for both. I think $10 or $15 more is probably fair. The cartridge and disc and all that sort of expensive. Maybe it's $80. Like, and who knows?
How about PS3 disc with a code for PSN on Vita?
Dude, that would be rad.
$75, $80.
I would pay $75. I actually would pay $75 or $80. And I think that if they do something aggressive like that, it would be a tremendous boon for them, especially for Vita.
Of course, the downside is, well, I guess maybe the price point will scare people off. You just have to be able to put that on the package, make it very clear what it is.
Well, what about this? What if they just start bundling those codes into games, regular priced games, but it costs you $10 on or PSN?
And I'll give you the secondary issue too.
Or it's like a discount code because you bought the PS3 version.
Oh, I'll give you one secondary issue too, though. Downside, of course, is if you just put a code into the box, then if someone goes out and buys that and then sells the code or something, oh, I have a Vita. Like, then you may get a lot of people buying it that way. Maybe that's not a bad thing if you're getting more people playing the Vita game, but if the idea is to make sure they're using it on both systems and it's kind of like a one-user license to play on both pieces of hardware.
There must be some way they could figure out to do that.
Yeah, with your PSN ID.
Because the downside definitely is that if it's a $60 game with a $35 Vita game.
Or more like a $50 Vita game.
Or a $50 Vita game.
For $80.
It can be the coolest fucking feature in the
I
world. No one's going to use it.
My ass out of the store right now.
That's right.
Yeah, and no one's going to, and it's just going to go for naught. And that would be really unfortunate to, because you've kind of, you've gotten there with this great piece of technology and you've got it in users' hands and you've made it to where, yeah, we can actually put this at a consumer level. Oh, but we can't, you know, figure out how to handle the software licensing, so we can't price it to where anyone can use it.
Right.
That would be a damn shame.
Yep.
All right. My surprise is that I think for Sony, people love our predictions. I feel like I'm the only one who came ready for this stuff.
You probably are.
Metal Gear Solid.
Like a mainline Metal Gear Solid?
Metal Gear Solid, mainline game, Hideo Kojima standing on stage with the first trailer playing behind him on the screen.
It has been long enough, hasn't it?
With crossplay on the Vita. Boom.
It might have crossplay on the Vita. It might have crossplay on the Vita. I don't think it'll be a quote-unquote in-game action, but I think it'll be in-engine. I think it'll be an in-engine cinematic, you know, typically what they do for their first Metal Gear sort of. But James is mulling this over. What do you think, James?
Well, I just think it's an interesting timing for. I'm trying to think, when did they launch Metal Gear Solid 3 in the PlayStation 2's life cycle? That's more my question. Like, you know, if they're at that point where they're going to do their traditional, you know, campaign where they do a 10-minute trailer the first time, and then, you know, you wait for a whole other E3 to get another 10-minute trailer. Where does that put them in the PS3's life cycle? And that's sort of an interesting
perfect spot. And it'll be, and that will be probably in 3D.
Yeah,
that will be in, that'll be one of the big 3D heroes. Put on your glasses. It'll get all quiet, and then you'll hear Snake.
So here's the here's
or something a, crazy like that.
Snake. So here's a question on your exclusivity. Here's a question on your prediction. Exclusive or not?
No. Not exclusive because it simply doesn't work for Konami anymore on a financial side. However, it will work for them on a financial side to accept a lot of money from Sony to make it the hero of the PS3 stage. And Microsoft isn't going to see any great reason to get in that pissing fight, because they'll probably have Rising at one point in time during their presentation, and they'll say, and it'll have Metal Gear up there, and they'll feel like, we ticked the Metal Gear box.
Do you think Rising is going to be there this year?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely will be there this year.
Is that,
I mean,
what you
I don't have anything to stand on that. It's not like, I mean, that's not coming from some insider knowledge. I just feel like it has to be there. You know, how much trouble that game has been through, I would imagine that there is someone down in Osaka every day just standing there going, work, 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 finish the game, work.
Okay, you can sleep for 10 minutes. Okay, wake up again, back to work.
And to be fair, like, Platinum's badasses. Those guys, they can bust out games. They have a very strong work ethic.
Where is Kojima's game? Not Kojima's game, Mikami's game. Like, where is that in his production life cycle? Do we know where that's at? Too early?
Well, I think early.
That's another game I'm really excited about. That's some more way off in the future, but I know could be really interesting.
Yep.
Just based on the pedigree.
Definitely. And it's going to be interesting to see where some of the other cool games that we've talked about wind up as far as these big line presentations. Mm-hmm. And I think that one thing Sony may show this year that is a growing awareness of, well, we need to incorporate more third-party games into our conference. And, you know, we joked about Kobe, but last year having NBA 2K there was a really big thing for them. That was really important. It was good stuff for them. It was a really, really good thing for them to bring Kobe out and show the basketball. And so now there's games like Lost Planet 3 and Dead Space 3 and even Madden Football. Who's going to have the Madden Football trailer? Or who's going to have the Madden Football gameplay?
And people on stage for it. That's a good point. What do you think about, are there any long missing games that we're still like waiting? I mean, Lost Guardian kind of is up there. What about Agent? Like, you think that's ever showing up again?
It's dead. It's gone.
Is
it's
it dead?
Gone and buried.
No one's ever said it.
It's gone and buried.
I mean, Rockstar San Diego is kind of, you know, they've been obviously working on something for a while too. So there's some interesting, there could be, I guess, a surprise out of left field. Borderlands probably is going to be a big game for one of the two press conferences.
Yeah, definitely.
I would suspect maybe 360 on that. Simply,
yeah, it feels like something they would have at their press conference.
It does. It does. But maybe that would be a great reason for Sony to step outside the boundaries and go get something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're going to have more awareness of that. And then, like you said, they need to push the Vita. And I've thought about this a lot. And I said it offhandishly a couple of weeks ago. I don't remember where. And it's the more I thought about it, I was like, you know, it actually makes a lot of sense. What about some iteration of Gran Turismo for Vita?
Well, that is such a giant fucking system seller in Europe. You know,
That's kind of a foregone conclusion, I think, at some point.
Well, it's a foregone conclusion at some point. How close could they be to doing it now? Because remember, when when PSP debuted, they were running all those screens with Gran Turismo on them. But, you know.
Yeah.
Mr. Kanata's going to have to leave.
I got to cut out.
Do you want to say anything about Wii U?
I know that this
is I want to ask you about Wii U real
quick. It's going to prove that my perceived Nintendo NT bias. No, I'm just not even going to be here for Nintendo.
So what do you think?
He's actually
wearing
a I Hate Nintendo shirt right now.
Since you have like a minute, tell me about Wii U in a minute.
I am ready for Wii U to blow me away. I want to see a Super Mario Brothers game that is a launch title that proves to me that this tablet is a brilliant idea and it shows me things that I never thought possible. I want to see glorious, 720p Mario's doing certain things. Doing certain things. And
720p things not running on my Dolphin emulator. Yeah.
No, but I mean, I would love to see a big major Mario game that is a launch title that brings the thing out in style.
Do you think the big Mario game for Wii U is going to be 2D or 3D?
I think, sadly, the first Mario game is going to be 2D. What I want is 3D different, as bold and daring as Galaxy was, but...
Universe. Super Mario,
Super Mario,
whatever.
Only Dimension. One way to go from Galaxy. Yeah. Oh, Dimension.
Super
I like
Mario
it.
Mario Dimension.
It could be a time-based thing.
Yeah.
I think it'll be 3D, and I think they'll have features in there that use the motion sensing in the tablet to allow you to like grab Mario physically out of the screen and into your tablet.
So
and then while you're playing, flick him by actually flicking your tablet controller and flicking him out of your tablet into the screen.
Because a flicking motion with a big heavy tablet towards your TV couldn't go wrong. Yeah.
There'll be certain.
Don't worry, then they'll bring out the tablet condom, and you'll be like, "What is this giant plastic?"
All kidding aside, I think that'd be cool.
I think your tablet is actually a green pipe. You can pull him into it at certain points.
Yeah,
the pipe mini game where you're like,
yeah. What else? I mean, I think we're gonna see some fun. Mature titles for Wii U. We're going to see shooter. We're going to see Ubisoft's going to be there in a big way.
But the problem is, I feel like you're going to end up seeing, and I don't want to get too far in the next, you're just going to see a lot of the games that are going to be coming out on PS3 and Xbox 360.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, while you're still here on Nintendo, I do wonder, and I kind of feel like I might be more excited about the 3DS games they show than the initial
Wii
U
I'm very
stuff.
Excited about 3DS games.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I am.
Okay. I believe you. I totally. I'm just.
But
I
think
I was surprised.
I think I would be awesome in a similar way that if there's some awesome 3DS Wii U integration, cross platformy kind of deals. I don't know what, but it would be cool to have that be a thing. And
GBA and GameCube say hi.
I know, and that was a waste of my time. Spent a lot of my time wasted trying to make that fucking little tinkle work. Bastard.
Tinkle?
That's what
Tinkle.
She said.
Yeah, Tinkle's fairy game.
My uncle had one of those problems. He had to take these big pills and drink lots of water.
I can't get that damn thing to tinkle. Okay, I gotta run. I'm sorry. Enjoy the rest.
Dude, break a leg.
Thank you.
Break a leg.
E3 is gonna be a blast.
I will see you soon. Next week, we've got all kinds of stuff. Totally Rad Show is doing shows on
daily.
Which I will be. Jeff Kanata will be with us.
That's
on
right.
Weekend Confirmed. Big show next week. We got all kinds of stuff. You won't want to miss it.
Don't miss any of it.
Bye.
All right, later, guys.
All right,
be
bye,
good.
Jeff.
All right, so let's wrap up on Sony. And I just want to come back now to the idea of services, because we took a lot of time talking about them on Nintendo, on Microsoft, and then, again, right, with Sony, it just felt natural to start talking about games. They're not without services. They've rebranded everything that they do on their televisions. If you look at the Sony televisions, which have, obviously still a big focus for them, they have a great reputation, the Bravia line, they've rebranded their entertainment service within the television front ends on smart TVs. I think they're going to carry that over, of course, to the PlayStation line. They have a great foundation for services. Why are we not talking about them in that same rarefied era of Microsoft's service delivery?
Because they're not as much at the forefront with pimping services for their show this year, right? They're not about.
We don't think so, but they've got the services. They're one to one with everything that's important.
True. And in this sense,
they don't have ESPN. They don't have. Do they have HBO Go? I don't think
everything that's important.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. So you're a big sports fan, and I am a sports fan as well. But is ESPN's on my box? They're all on my box, but I don't.
I don't know. I mean, I guess you expect sort of like. maybe it's just because we have expected Microsoft to be the ones to move first in a lot of those areas. Mm-hmm. Like, and I know they, you know, PS3's definitely changed that a little bit with, you know, they have like MLB, they've got NHL, they've got some of those sports packages, they have the NFL Sunday Ticket, which is a really exciting thing. So maybe it's like a there's some sort of mental block in realizing they've done some things.
I mean, Sunday Ticket,
they had Amazon first.
Let me say how big Sunday Ticket is. Sunday Ticket for me was huge because that was when I was shopping gigantic. For apartments, the place that I moved into, one of the things that had held me off, you know, when I was looking last year
was lack of satellite.
Nope. Now I'm not worried about it. You know, I mean, admittedly, I'm not thrilled about Time Warner Cable, but actually so far they've been good to me. I don't really have anything negative to say about Time Warner Cable.
I will say Time Warner, a lot of cable companies vary based on where you're getting it. LA's Time Warner, pretty good.
All it'll take is one call to customer service to change your mind, though.
Yeah, wow. Well.
Oh, you know what? Actually, you're right, because getting it set up was a nightmare. Dude. But now that it's up and running, it's fine, and it works great. And so for the and yes, new DirecTV customers can get Sunday Ticket for free, but I'm going to pay my $300. I'm going to have my Sunday DirecTV on – I'm a direct Sunday Ticket on my PS3, mm-hmm. which will work great for me.
Yep.
And so PS3 is working the way – it does have great services.
Yeah, and so maybe there's something new there. I mean, they still have PlayStation Plus, which could – you know, you never know. Like, that could still be an interesting point of contention. You could see something new there.
That's an interesting point.
Does anybody know how that's doing? Like, how many subscribers they have? Or
I don't. Have they ever really said how many PS Plus? It seems like there's I don't know. You know, there's maybe a very vocal minority, but it seems like there's a lot of free content on there and a lot of discounted content, and that the people that have it and use it are really happy with it.
My friends list, right. which is predominantly journos and game devs, is about 1 in 3 plus members. And that takes into account that a lot of them are Sony folks. Outside of Sony folks, I'd say it's more like 1 in 4.
Yeah, I think that's not bad for press, considering like they get a lot of that stuff for free and you don't have time to or care about worrying about discounted games on PSN.
Yeah.
Whereas I think
think they've given it. I mean, I don't know. They didn't give me Plus, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have it. I don't have enough time for it, but I do sometimes. I actually do think about it like, wow, there are some really good deals, or there's a game I might actually play a little bit if I downloaded it, but I know I wouldn't pay for it every month and probably wouldn't get my worth out of it. But I do think maybe it's not even about making PS Plus better. Maybe it's just continuing to promote that to people, because it does seem like for a lot of people it would make sense.
Definitely.
And really for, you know, since you already have free online gameplay, you know, paying a fee to Sony every year to get a lot of stuff for free.
If you're a single platform holder and it's PlayStation 3, then having Plus starts to make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
just
I think
for no other reason than you get that, you know, you get that game or two to play every month that's new and just comes with the service. That alone, plus the discounts, probably a pretty good deal.
Well, and you already have your online too, so you're not having to pay for that. You know,
yeah.
Right? And it's Sony; they are an entertainment company, so they have a good music service, they have a good video service. I think that
what's next? What's the service they don't have? Like, I'm trying to think about it. Like, yeah, okay, there's a couple things. ESPN would be great, like more live sports, but they do have like all the major sports leagues. So it's really, for me, it's just because they don't have college.
The one that would cut into Microsoft's heart would be for them to echo a set-top box deal for a television service provider. Well,
did they do that somewhere? Or am I making that up in my head? Didn't they have that for like Virgin?
Maybe they did. I don't think they've had a big domestic. Well, I don't think
not
they've had
not
a big
the U.S.
American,
no,
right?
I think they have in Europe. But
so if they were able to do like a similar to Xbox AT&T UVerse deal or something like that, where your 360 could be your portal to IPTV and it's all tied into their entertainment system, that would be a big thing.
Well, and I wonder if that's sort of an interesting a future potentially to hook into, you know, your Time Warner account or bring, you know, those cable, because a lot of those cable companies now have those apps for your iPad or things. So like I could watch my live Time Warner TV if I'm in my house. So if someone's using the TV, you could watch a TV channel. And eventually I think on demand is going to move into that too, where you could on demand directly to your iPad without a cable box. So if, you know, Sony or Microsoft was able to get those deals with a Time Warner, a Comcast, or things like that, again, talking in the services realm, it could be an interesting way to offer people a lot of content they normally, you know, you wouldn't even need a cable box anymore to get.
And if they do it by virtue of their connectivity with the Vita to sort of wrap back around to that, then you get some interesting ideas. Like you were talking about, like, it's an iPad with an app and such and different things. Now if you're tied in through your Vita to your PS3, like maybe there's some things you could do there. Maybe like all sites, a weird like interactive television stuff. Like you're watching something in an app on your PS3, but you can interact.
Especially with the touch, the ability just to touch the Vita on your thing. Or if you're, you know, interacting with people or sending a tweet out or a message out or playing a trivia game during a show, it could be
Did you guys ever see Picture Pages growing up? It was like a kids show. Bill Cosby hosted it, and it was like a thing. Mm-hmm. It was like an interactive. Just made me think of this. Like an interactive coloring book or comic book, and he'd have a special pen that they would send you when you subscribed to the show, and you would actually follow along with him, and that the pen, based on where you were on the book, would, you know, you'd do exercises with him, basically. Hmm. But it was sort of an interactive TV thing.
There were some attempts at interactive television in the 80s.
Yeah, way
back. That were pretty unsuccessful, and I'm not saying that, and I'm not really, and having seen those, I don't really think I'm that excited about the idea of, like, and maybe it's not for me, maybe this is something that is for somebody, like watching American Idol and being like,
or watching a game show and being able to be another contestant would be kind of cool. Like to see how you score up against. So
yeah,
keeps
I mean
track
that one versus 100 thing was pretty popular for what it was on Xbox Live. Yeah. Like maybe
how did that not work for Microsoft? Why did they abandon that?
I think it just was like it was so popular, but it just wasn't finding.
They just didn't find a way to monetize it. Right.
I think that was,
and it was such a cool idea.
Yeah,
people were really into that.
Yeah,
you give me like a live version of The Price is Right, I can play along with and potentially win prizes and. Every
dude, I am so day. Like as an aside, I am so hooked on You Don't Know Jack on Facebook.
Oh yeah, you were
ridiculous.
Saying
ridiculous.
I've heard really good things. A bunch of people have said how good it is.
It's ridiculous. They've reduced it to where it's basically five questions, and the fifth one is the Jack attack. And they have it's exactly as you remembered it, but in a smaller chunk. It's like, remember how the old game was done into sections?
Oh, right.
It's like you pay one section and that's the whole thing. It matches you asynchronously in score playing the same game against friends who've played it.
Nice.
And so you're getting to see how everyone's doing. It feels like you're actually playing against people at the same time. Same ridiculously awesome sense of humor. Like one of the ones, like one of this or that's I played recently was bikini wax, name for a bikini wax or an alt rock band.
Nice.
That's awesome. Yeah.
No, it's a great, in fact, really weird. I downloaded the XBLA version of that not long ago, so I had something else to play with my girlfriend, and that shit's still great. I mean, it's still a very, very good formula. I'm glad to hear it's like working well on Facebook.
So Sony, how do you feel about it wrapping it up? I feel like it's going to be a good presentation for them. I think that this is make or break time for the Vita.
Yep.
And I think that if they've done it right and are really able to show Vita as a strong platform for a lot of cool things, for instance, they just showed Snapshot, which is a cool artistic game, so they can show that side of it. If they can show it playing some of their mainline games and then really build this, you know, idea of interaction between PS3 and Vita and how it's really an extension of your PlayStation world, that they can really, you know, make solid contact with that and be successful. What do you guys think?
I think there's a lot of potential for them to surprise people because, you know, right now we're sort of talking about, well, what could you do with it? Mm-hmm. If they've thought of like at least one or two of those things that are really cool that people are going to latch onto, I think it could really change how a lot of people, including myself, sort of look at that transferring cross-compatibility thing. Because I look at it and I'm kind of like, well, I'm not sold on the idea. I'm sold on the concept. I just haven't seen it executed. Maybe the best example is like a sports game where you can take your mm-hmm. franchise online. But I'm hopeful for it, I think.
Yeah, I think they're the future of the Vita and seeing where the Vita is going to go and knowing that the Vita is going to live for several more years. Like the Vita still is very early in its life cycle. This really is where they begin setting the Vita up for the next part of its life cycle. And so I think there's a lot of groundwork that this year is going to lay. And I think you're going to start to see the future of the Vita really quickly here. And so I think that's probably the most interesting thing I'm most intrigued by. I'm probably most excited to see Last of Us, though.
All right. Maybe the most controversial one yet to come. We're going to talk about Nintendo and the Wii U when we return.
Who's got poopy pants? Poopy pants. Poopy pants.
Leo poopy pants, Leo poopy pants, Leo poopy pants, Leo poopy pants.
And are you also poopy pantsing?
I'm me. I'm not poopy pantsing, I'm just saying. I'm not poopy pantsing, I'm just saying.
I think people are gonna pay $60 to do that a lot.
I'm not poopy pantsing, I'm just saying.
I think people are going to pay $60 to do that a lot.
If only we could get people to pay 60 pants to do that. 60 bucks to do that. 60 pants. Bring 60
Four
pants.
Bucks pants.
Yeah, it's all about the same.
$60 pants.
All right, folks. Tuesday morning is when we reconvene for the kickoff of the floor. But prior to that, Nintendo has that slot in the morning all to their own. Last year, they showed the Wii U. This year, they show the Wii U 2 revision.
Yeah, again. Yeah.
Review version.
This year, they show games, not tech demos.
Right. So, yeah. What do you guys think about the Wii U? How's it going to debut? There's, you know, two sides to this. There's certainly a bunch of folks who probably feel like it's going to be showing a lot of the stuff that Nintendo hasn't had access to before. So, it's like, hey, now we have a platform that can play Modern Warfare and Assassin's Creed, and so we're going to show those games. But let's not forget, this is a Nintendo first-party, big-time platform, and where do you think they're going to go?
Well, I mean, they're going to show, you know, the mature games to try and capture that crowd and some of these third-party games. I really think that it's interesting because they got a lot of flack for a couple of years there where they were showing a lot of games that didn't really appeal to their core fan and some pretty harsh vitriol. And I thought last year, and maybe the year before, but last year they really started to kind of hit it out of the park with the amount of, like, you're like, holy shit, there's a ton of games that a Nintendo core gamer fan would really want to play.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see if that continues. I'm a little worried you're going to see, like, some of the, like, ports of the shooters you're already going to be playing on your Xbox 360 or PS3, and yeah, they may have some cool ways of using that tablet controller, but I'm not really interested. Like, if you're going to show me the new Rainbow Six game running on your Wii U, that's cool and all, but am I really going to play it on the Wii U? The tablet's going to have to be
super... Tactpad right there. I'll be able to, like, give commands and...
It could be... if it's really cool, maybe, but I'm just... I don't know. Maybe I still have this weird bias towards playing, like, a hardcore game on a Wii.
Where's the install base for those multi-platform titles going to be? Where's the biggest market share going to be? Are the, you know, people going to be playing it the most?
There's a very clicky plastic bottle of water there.
That was unfortunate. And that's the other thing. Like, is it going to look better? Like, I assume it's going to look better than the Xbox and the PS3 versions. That's kind of the general thought online, is it's going to be slightly more powerful, but... You know, is it going to look better than my gaming PC to play some of those games? Is it going to, you know, where's the appeal for me to play those games on it? To me, I guess Nintendo's boxes are and have been always about the exclusive games. That's for Wii, GameCube, really probably since the N64. I have bought Nintendo platforms so that I can play games that I can only play on Nintendo platforms.
Could not agree more.
And I agree 100%. And I think that that's what really confuses me when people get worried about, like, how is it going to play Call of Duty or what's the Assassin's Creed? It doesn't even matter. I mean, it matters. Like, at what point do we look back over the last 10 years and say we've been talking about Nintendo's need to branch out into third parties for a decade? And look, it's just not the Super Nintendo era anymore. Yes, during the Super Nintendo era, they had all of these publishers who made all these great games on that platform. And since then, those publishers have moved to creating Sony and Microsoft games. I'm sorry, PlayStation and Xbox games. And it hasn't slowed Nintendo down.
Well, and as long as they have their general philosophy intact of not losing money on their hardware, they can make that happen. So as long as they aren't losing money on this Wii U hardware, which, you know, in theory, based on where everyone's saying the power is, they shouldn't, right? So the 3DS, they can take that risk more because they know they're going to make it back on third-party games because they get a cut of every game that's sold in the system. So they don't have to worry about that as much. They haven't had to worry about third-party games. As long as they sell lots of copies of their games, sell some third-party games, and make money on the hardware, they have a pretty good financial model. And if they do make a hit game like Wii Sports that everyone had to have at the time, they get really, really filthy rich for a few years. I don't know. I'm excited to see what the core Nintendo games are. Like, what is the Mario game? What is the Zelda game? What are the features? How does that – what kind of design things? Because I do think the Wii –
But don't you think it's unlikely they show both? They'll show one or the other.
I think they'll give you a gameplay demo of one and give you a trailer of the other. I think they're going to come with a Zelda trailer and a Mario demo would be my guess.
I agree with you about the Mario demo. I don't think there'll be anything Zelda related for it yet.
Well, didn't they have some Zelda stuff – you know, on they screen showed, last year?
Yeah, so yeah. They showed, yeah, that was part of their tech demo, was they showed Link fighting this spider.
Yeah.
And it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, you could be right. I mean, Skyward Sword is fresh enough.
It's fresh, and they are aware of the power of those mascots and then not diluting, like, they'll want one of them to be the standard bearer for the launch and not be distraction of the other one.
Well, I will say this. If there is not a Zelda game on Wii U, I think they will have a Zelda game on 3DS.
That's fair. I could definitely see them do that. I could definitely see them still have Link up there on the stage, but through a 3D. That would sound, that makes a lot of sense.
And or that you may see something, and you might see, I think there could be an interesting application of some sort of Four Swords type game on the Wii U. Like, I think that the tablet
that
controller
cool.
potentially lends itself to some of the things they've liked to do with the Four Swords on GameCube with the Game Boy Advances.
See, and that brings up the tablet controller itself, I think, is either going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, like everybody thinks it's awesome, or it's going to be, you know, ballast that sinks that console to the bottom of the sea. Because, well, for a couple reasons. One is a lot of the stuff that they're showing off is like, okay, Arkham City, Assassin's Creed, Brotherhood, stuff we've already played and seen. We've seen, you know, yes, there'll be new functionality, but you're talking about third-party developers shoehorning in, you know,
well, and that
functionality into a new peripheral that doesn't exist on any of the other
that's
platforms.
What you'll see at E3, but will you see that at their press conference? Your press conference is where you're going to highlight the, what, 10 games, maybe 4 or 5 of them published by Nintendo that really actually use the controller well. I don't feel like they would, like, throw...
I wasn't joking about the flinging thing. I really think they'll have...
Flinging Mario onto the screen?
Like, yeah, things where you're, like, using this thing to catch things out of the screen and fling them back in and have a combination experience.
I don't doubt that. I just don't think at their press conference... I think you're right. I think there are going to be third-party games where you use it for inventory management or squad control or stuff that is kind of interesting but not really interesting. I do think, though, at the press conference, they're only going to show stuff like that. Like you said, Garnet, the flinging or the really interesting game applications that feel new and fresh. And if they don't, then...
Or something like, you know, you take the... Something like where you take the tablet controller and hold it up towards the screen and are able to, like, literally take a piece of the screen off and pull it into your game now down here, and then things change between
Or stuff like if they showed off a Metroid title where you could use scanning as the... Like, you hold that up and look
through that. Yeah, we were talking about that last week.
Yeah,
the week before this.
Oh, yeah, you're right. But yeah,
because we know, so by the way, since you brought up Metroid, we know that Retro has had, you know, ads running in the papers or the, you know, the trade journals for staff to staff up for production.
Right. Retro is probably the studio you, outside of like EAD, you're like most excited to see what the hell they've been working on, because Donkey Kong Country Returns was so freaking good and the Metroid Prime games were so freaking good. They are on a hot streak of hot streaks.
Yeah.
And what that studio puts out is probably one of the things I'm going to be most excited about. Hopefully they're showing it.
I figure it's got to be one of the
big games.
Did you
see, there was some rumor, and I don't mean to spread rumors, but there was some crazy-ass rumor about Metroid meets Star Fox.
That was the rumor, and I'm not even going to dignify that with the... Because the source on it was a legendary figure from 1UP history.
Oh, okay. All right.
And I'll just say that that eliminated any credence...
All right.
To it whatsoever.
Well, that's fair. It was one of those rumors where I was like, no way. And
however,
like, it's so crazy.
However, it makes sense to the extent that Retro, I think, would very likely be working on something Metroid.
Right.
I mean, they did a great job with Metroid. It was
put the hint of believability in there to make the rumor seem true.
Right. And a Metroid game, like we talked about, makes so much sense for this platform. I don't know why you'd spoil Star Fox into it.
But do you want another Metroid game from Retro, or do you want another Donkey Kong Country?
I think it'll be a Metroid game.
Yeah, I would like to see them do. I'd like to see them do another Metroid game, just because the system's going to be more powerful, and I think that's more important for
3D Metroid or 2D Metroid.
3D. With that tablet, I mean,
I'd love a 3D hardcore like Super Metroid 2 sort of thing. Like, I mean, I don't know what you do with the tablet there, but I don't even really give a
shit.
Just
play it on the tablet.
Just give me another Metroid. Like, but I mean, I just knew they did Donkey Kong so well. It's like, you can do such a good 2D game. Like, there's not enough out
there.
They
did. They definitely did.
That's my fanboyism.
It's your fanboyism. Okay.
So, I don't know. I don't know. Bottom line for me, hopefully they'll show some cool first-party stuff, because I'm really worried about the third-party stuff just in general. How they're going to, especially if it's a multi-platform title, how they're going to, you know, go, okay, we're going to divert, you know, extra resources that we're not diverting on any of these other versions of the game to enable this tablet with some cool functionality, and then try to outsell the other two more ubiquitous, you know, I don't know.
So Nintendo's made overtures towards the public as far as improving and modernizing their online storefront and their media services.
That's
clearly, you know, we've talked about it with Sony. We've talked about it with Microsoft. And there have been, like, one thing that was very much a sleeper hit was Netflix on Wii. Because some people had Wii. There was, huge numbers of people who were Netflixing on their Wii.
Right, because a lot of people, if you had a Wii, you may only have, a DVD player or something in the living room, so you didn't have any way of Netflixing.
Or you had a Wii in the second bedroom or, something like that.
Yeah, where kids could watch Wii in their room.
I just Wii watch in the Netflix. Bathroom. But sorry.
Wrong Wii, Jeff.
Sorry, yep.
Don't worry, we'll edit that out.
Make sure that's a Wii remote you pick up off the shelf.
I was using my outside voice when I should have been using my inside voice.
Yes. All right. Anyway, but getting back to it, how likely do we really think it is that Nintendo can do anything that's a modern user experience in digital storefront and actually being on a competitive footing with PlayStation Network and Live?
I don't know that they want to. It feels like they don't. I mean,
they certainly they said they do. Reggie stood up there and said, "Hey, we recognize all these things."
I mean, I know Reggie and OA does. I don't know that Nintendo of Japan entirely knows it. They definitely they've taken a huge step forward, I will say, with the 3DS. The 3DS is a much better experience for a lot of that stuff. So, if they take another step forward on Wii U and it's not just a replication of the 3DS experience, they might be caught up to the beginning of Xbox or PlayStation Store or something. I mean, they're still behind. I don't know. It's interesting how those.
How much does that hinder a Wii U then?
I don't know. It'll be interesting. I don't know if the audience on Wii U is that, and their games never take advantage of that.
So we say that now, and yet at the same time, with each passing year, we do continue to get more and more connected as a society. We get more and more accepting and then expecting of these features. I mean, certainly if I showed you a smart TV from today, even 3 or 4 years ago, you'd be,
surprised.
You'd be pretty surprised. You'd be like, wow, so my TV has a dual core processor and runs all my desktop applications that I want to run off a computer?
Yeah, good point.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, I think they have done a pretty good job on the 3DS of putting in, Mario Kart had some pretty good online functionality. They actually patched Mario Kart to take an exploit out, which is pretty stunning for Nintendo to patch a portable game.
They added the folder system to the desktop, which, although a little primitive, shows that they were listening and said, hey, okay, we're going to address this.
Yep. Maybe the iceberg is melting a little bit and things are changing, but I don't know. It's only been a year since 3DS, right? It hasn't been that long. So I just wonder how far they could have come in that time. Then again, a lot of that interface might just go right onto the tablet and they may use a lot of the same things they kind of already built. So maybe it's just continuing to polish that and make it kind of more of a unified experience between the two.
Well, as much trouble as you have getting anything interesting to surface into PlayStation Network or Xbox Live Arcade, trying to find the interesting things outside of someone telling you or word of mouth on the Wii Shop is even more annoying.
Yeah. Oh, and it's getting in there and navigating that is even more of a cesspool
than
the other online marketplaces, which are pretty bad.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're going to see more of that. It shouldn't have been, right? They had that whole channel system.
They had the channel system, which looked like it was right on spot.
Right, and it's just I think I still have 6 empty channels. It's criminally underused on the Wii, unfortunately. We've talked a lot about 3DS's online system. I actually think Nintendo's press conference is probably going to excite people more for what comes out on 3DS and what they show on 3DS than what they show on Wii U.
Well, that's not a good sign for Wii U, then.
No, but I don't think that's true either, because I feel like that first showing, it'll probably be cool, and the first showing of the Wii had a lot of interesting things, too, but whenever they've kind of had these things that have shifted people's way you play a game, the touch screen on the DS, mm-hmm. the Wii remote, now the tablet, which is kind of a little bit of both of them combined, the early stuff never really showed the true potential. And you already had the tech demo year last year.
Right.
So a lot of the third parties won't be showing the true potential yet, some of the other people. Whereas I think the 3DS now has had that extra time for people to figure out, okay, how can we use some of this augmented reality? How can we bring some of these 3D features? What are the things we can bring to the game? And it's a little bit more of a mature platform now. And usually, if you look back even at the Wii or and maybe not the Wii as much as the DS. The DS definitely had its like slouch period where there wasn't a lot of good software, and then the software really started hitting as people kind of wrapped their heads around it. And I wonder if this is going to be that point for the 3DS where people have started to wrap their heads, and you're not going to see that software for a bit, but you're going to start seeing that software in kind of its early stages.
What if the Wii U is the matured version of the Wii, and the tablet just becomes a nice to have add on? And developers look at it the same way, because keep in mind, you know, things like the THQ experiment are over. Yeah. And so it's like, are developers going to be chilled to working on the Wii U, or are they going to say, okay, well, we don't just make, you know, SpongeBob SquarePants with Wiimote functionality in it. We do games for it.
Well, I think it's a catch-22, like anything. Like, they have to see what kind of install base. I mean, some developers will see what kind of install base Nintendo gets out of the gate and then go, okay, yeah, we can invest in this. And
yeah, it's interesting because you don't want to necessarily be the ones that are, like, waiting for the install base. If you waited for the install base on Wii, you missed a golden opportunity when everyone bought Wiis right off the bat. So it's sort of like, I feel... And the other interesting part is it's so close to what you're already developing towards in terms of PS3 and Xbox that I think for some developers it's not that big of a step. Whereas, you know, the challenge for Wii was if you were making a PS3 and an Xbox 360 game, the Wii didn't make a lot of sense. It was
what do you do with your
down.
Art? What do you do with your AI? How do you handle everything?
You're having to change a lot. Maybe, and you saw a ton of the PS2 games got ports.
Yeah.
So that's a very kind of interesting thing where this is now coming out. It's almost like if the Wii had came out while the Xbox and PS2 were out and the Xbox, you know, the next generation wasn't out yet, what would have happened then? And I think you are going to actually see, you know, some more ports than what you did probably for the first time the Wii around, mainly because there's more parity, and secondly because what if Nintendo has some killer application game and it's, you know... You saw how big Draw Something was. What if they have like a Draw Something or something like that that captures everyone's imagination again and turns the Wii U into the hot Christmas toy at $250? Like, it could happen again. And if it does, you know, you may want to try and be around so you can ride the wave.
I like how you said at $250.
Well, I'm assuming like they're going to come back. Maybe it's not $250.
I agree with you, but I think that there's still a huge portion of the original Wii, you know, owners now that are... Even the casual ones are sort of a little burnt on it. Like, feel like they didn't get quite what they wanted out of the whole thing, out of the whole life cycle. And they're looking back and going, you know what, how much did I play this? And did I end up buying another console later? And that sort of thing. And
so you're talking about the, how much does the, I bought the Wii Sports player factor into it?
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, and to your point, like, does the kid ask for a Wii U this year? Or does he want an iPad? Does the family want an iPad instead of a Wii U? Because everyone can use the iPad and do a lot of things on the iPad. Is the iPad a more practical gift than the Wii U for that very same reason? Even though who knows, $250, $300. I don't know what the price is.
We don't know.
But, twice as much, but there's a lot more you can do with it.
Nintendo's reselling a lot of its existing audience. I mean, as everyone does, but I think the experience of the last console life cycle was such that, well, I know gamers in general, like a lot of gamers, with the exception of some of the first party titles that were really good that people liked, were kind of like, yeah, the Wii is my second or third tier when it comes to gaming. Or maybe
it was my Nintendo box. It was my Nintendo game box. Like, I put a new Nintendo game comes out. Where's my Wii?
Can they be successful for the Wii U? People treat it that way, though. The answer is probably no.
All right, so we think we'll see a big first party game. We think we'll see. Oh, I've got a question for you. You're hot for 3DS. Do you think you'll see more 2D stuff now that, you know, Nintendo came over to the dark side with their Mario 2D game that's coming?
I don't know. Like, I mean, that might be the big one. I'm really excited about that game. That's coming out in August, I think. So,
but does that open the door for more developers to say, okay, you know what, I can just treat this thing like another DS and just, I don't have to go through
it? I mean, I think you'll probably see like a 2D Castlevania. I don't know. I think you'll see some 2D stuff, and hopefully people keep making 2D games because there's a lot of people that really enjoy still playing 2D games, myself included.
Definitely.
And, I mean, I hope you keep seeing 2D games on Wii U. Like, a 2D Mario Brothers on Wii U would be fine for me. A 2D Metroid, another Donkey Kong Country Returns, like, all that stuff, bring it on. Like, I will pay $50 for those games every time if they are as good as, like, New Super Mario Brothers and... the Metroid games on the DS have been, and or another Castlevania Metroidvania type Castlevania game, bring that to my Wii U and I'll give you $50 for it, no problem.
So as we wrap up this episode before we head to Vanishing Moves, what are you most excited for? What are you most looking forward to at E3?
Jeez, that's a really tough one. I honestly, and this is going to be really lame because this isn't going to be at E3, but I want to see whatever the new sizzle footage is for GTA, if in fact that ends up getting shown anywhere.
God, I hope I'm right.
I hope you're right. No, I mean,
I hope you're right too. I'd love to see more of that. I mean, like, I thought the first trailer was awesome, and I was dying to see more.
Yeah,
it was really sweet. I mean, I'm really excited to see Halo 4. Like, I really want to see. There's a lot. If you were in this industry, there's a lot. You know, a lot has happened around 343, and there's a lot of intrigue into the team they've built up there. And so, I think for everyone in the industry, like, we are all very fascinated to see like what those guys have put together, and it's a very intriguing project all the way around between the history of the franchise, the team that's involved, Microsoft. You know, it's gonna be really fun to see that. I'm excited to see Last of Us, which I haven't seen it yet, and I know some people have. So,
Assassin's Creed 3 is gonna be great.
I mean, and I have seen the video for Assassin's Creed 3. I don't know. Did they release that online? The video they were showing earlier this year, like at PAX and stuff. I don't even know if they
gameplay.
Yeah, like the whole Battle of Bunker Hill.
Mm-mm.
Okay, they showed it at PAX, but I don't even know if that's actually out there. But like that game looks incredible.
They released the first video that had gameplay in it.
Oh yeah, but not.
And it showed some Battle of Bunker. I didn't know it was Bunker Hill, but they showed some battle scenes where it was like the assassin movie through the battle.
But it wasn't like a gameplay demo. Like it wasn't a gameplay.
It wasn't a gameplay.
It was a gameplay demo that like froze, and like I would talk about it. Well, it actually was like a full demo, but it would freeze at certain points, and they tell you things.
But that they did. That they haven't shown.
So I'm really excited to see more of that. I don't know. I mean, it's just like there's nothing that I'm kind of holding my breath for this year. I'm hoping for a surprise or two. I'm excited to see what they've got for Wii, what Nintendo's working on. I think there's just a lot of really good games. The tool set's so mature. There's a lot of great developers that have had a lot of time to work on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of hoping to see just a bunch of games that I'm really stoked to go play and hopefully get hands-on with some of them or see some presentations at the show. And, I'm hoping that we'll see a big lineup this fall and into next spring where we're like, hell yeah, there's some good stuff coming and there's a lot of games to be excited about right now.
I am in a really tough place because I agree with you. Like, there's a lot of great games, especially that I saw a couple weeks ago over the pre-E3. There's some more that I've heard about that are, you know, they were in the process of getting finalized for their demos. So this is a very rich time for publishers, for games that they're going to be able to show. And a lot of you folks already know which ones you're looking forward to. I do really hope that I'm right about Grand Theft Auto. I really want to see more of that game. Maybe partly because I live in LA now, and I don't know. It's just there was something about that video that was just like, wow, like that. Like just,
it's a lived in world. Like you, it just looks so good.
I was really, really digging on that. I cannot wait to talk to you all about Dishonored.
Oh yes,
the fucking game is bad to the bone. I mean, it is really, really badass. And then on the hardware side, I'm really torn here. I'm excited, really excited about Wii U because I'm you know, having been there and messing with the tech demos last year, I was really caught in this, you know, push-pull between interesting, cool, like I'm in someone's lab playing with a toy thing, and what the hell did I didn't really ask for this. Why do I want this tethered tablet thing connected to my Wii? So I'm really interested to see what they've done with that. On the other hand, I kind of think that there's an open door here for Sony to gut punch them with really great connectivity between the Vita and the PS3. And I don't have like some sort of insider knowledge to base this also off of other than just reading between the lines and paying attention to some of the stuff that they've been showing in the last couple of weeks. And I'm starting to think, wow, you know, if they really run with that stuff, like this could be a really cool combination of PS3, PlayStation Network, and Vita that really puts those devices together into a really cool triad. So that's where I'm at with that stuff. Mm. All right, time to rock on to the finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
All right, who, I guess I get to pick. How about James, you can start off.
So we didn't get to talk about this, but yesterday we announced a brand new Ratchet & Clank game called Full Frontal Assault.
Awesome.
And
did you want to talk about it? I'm sorry, I kind of didn't want to put you on the spot. I don't know.
No,
you should have talked about it.
Well, it's fine. It's brief. We don't have to say too much about it. But yeah, it's we've got this whole big Ratchet & Clank. It's the 10th anniversary of Ratchet & Clank, 10 years of Ratchet & Clank. I think Ratchet has cemented himself as one of PlayStation's most iconic characters at this point. And,
definitely.
So we, you know, we've got the HD collection that Idle Minds ported to PS3, and that's going to be coming out this summer. But we wanted to do something too, and we put together this great game that kind of goes back to the classic third-person shooter formula. It's got some online play, so you can play the game with your friends. And while it's got that classic gameplay with great story, weapons, it's going to be has a brand new twist that is a lot of fun.
And it's multiplayer.
And there is multiplayer.
So you guys have thrown down classic a bunch in discussing this already. When you say classic, which Ratchet & Clank games specifically are you hearkening back to the most? As far is it like a Going Commando touchstone, or
I would say it's that classic up your arsenal, like, you know, like it's got that feel of a great, you know, the shooting is really important and action is really important in this game. And you know, we're going to reveal more about the twists and everything as time goes along, but I think being able to play with your friends, having, you know, another classic game, and it's a downloadable game in North America. It's like Quest for Booty, there will be a disc in Europe, but downloadable only in North America. So it'll be, you know, kind of a smaller downloadable game, but the replayability with the online stuff is going to be really, really high, and we are really stoked on it, and I'm really glad it's named Full Frontal Assault.
And the Euro title's different, right?
The Euro title is different. That also harkens back to the PS2 era. The Euro title is Ratchet & Clank Q-Force. Because Full Frontal Assault does not translate very well. And if you actually remember back to the PS2 games, Going Commando was Ratchet & Clank Locked and Loaded. Up Your Arsenal was merely Ratchet & Clank 3. And Ratchet Deadlocked was Ratchet Gladiator in Europe. So all three of the sequels on PS2 had different titles. And they didn't actually call the games by the Future Saga name that we had in the US on PS3. So there's all these different names. My favorite, though, and I don't even know the full name because it's so ridiculous, is if you buy the Ratchet Collection that is coming out this summer in Japan, it is like Ratchet & Clank 1 plus 2 plus 3, the glorious, amazing, fantastic collection or something. Like, it is
sweet.
Like the longest like name ever. It's something like 13 words when translated directly into English. It is awesome, and they've been doing a ton of stuff to promote that over there because the PS2 games were hugely popular in Japan. So
I'd just like to note that you passed the Insomniac exam for knowledge of the entire series by name correctly.
I know my Ratchet & Clank, bitches.
Well done.
I'm just excited there's more Ratchet & Clank coming.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We're not showing it at E3, so it's sort of a pre-E3 announcement because Europe had to kind of start telling retailers that they're going to be selling this thing. And we all know how well retailers keep secrets.
Truth. Mr. Jeff Mattis.
Yes. Okay, so I'm going to really quick rattle off a few of the best iPad games I've been playing lately. Some of these are a little old, but, you know, they're new to me. So Airmail, which actually is new, that just came out. It is basically a Crimson Skies without the shooting. So it's a lot of you're flying a biplane. It's thematically a little kid based, but you can set up one of three control schemes. One I'm using is a full tilt to fly and turn, and it looks really good.
So is this like Airplane Paperboy?
Sort of. It's not as – not every mission is a delivery mission.
Okay.
So, you know, that you're doing stuff like, you know, they'll have a mission where you attach a net to the bottom of your plane and you have to go scoop fish out of the water and drop them somewhere. Or, you know, there it is a lot of, you know, it's not entirely the FedEx game, but there's a lot of that in there. Okay. The thing is on the iPad 2, because you're typically playing a couple missions and it's pretty bite-sized and it's so pretty, you don't tend to mind as much, or I don't tend to mind as much. So very good. The only other two that I'll tease here are a game called Squids, which is a sort of an RPG with a real-time – or not a real-time, a turn-based strategy thing. So you basically have all these squids. You're going out on a quest and you have to kill enemies. And the way you do it is you sort of grab a squid and drag and shoot them, sort of like a slingshot mechanic. And there's like a shuffleboard kind of thing where you can knock guys off the side of the level, and each of the squids has their own powers and things that they can do, heal each other or whatever. That was also very fun. And then Pizza versus Skeletons is
what the fuck?
The third game, which is probably my favorite of the three so far that I'm talking about. This is you basically play a giant pizza and you're crushing skeletons, and it's all gyroscope based. So you tap to jump, but you move left and right, move the tablet left and right, tilt it to determine your pizza's velocity. The levels are it's as ridiculous and silly and crazy and funny as it sounds. And it's one of those things where tons of bite-sized small levels, really easy to get into.
Kind of pizza?
Well, actually, you start out with just a generic pizza.
So you gain toppings as you play?
Well, you actually customize. And it's not just like more toppings. You can customize more toppings and hats and monocles. And it's just fucking weird and awesome.
Cool. And I'm going to wrap it up quickly just by saying that I have found a place to start playing my Vita all the time. And it's over lunch playing Hot Shots Golf. Because it's just as addictive as it ever was. And, that there's a reason that game was so successful on the PSP. And it's really, really good. But boy, the greens, once you get into even like the amateur level, as you get into some of the second and third tier courses, are just ridiculous. The undulation of the greens and trying to make a putt over like 35 or 40 yards starts to get really crazy. And there's like, it has... as much played, and I guess the reason it comes up and I wanted to bring in here my finishing move, is having found a game on the Vita that I'm now playing more than just playing to review or take a look at has reminded me what a cool piece of hardware it is and gotten me excited again about the Vita, especially as we come into E3 and thinking, wow, if I just could get a little more momentum going behind picking this thing up and messing with it and having it being part of my daily digital routine, it's a really nice device. Yeah, and there's a big part of that.
Well, and I think the other good thing about the Vita, especially compared to the PSP, is how much easier it is to get back into games and where it restarts you. And like, it's such a smoother user experience for a portable system, and it makes Hotshot Golfs on the Vita just so much better than Hotshot Golfs on the PSP ever was.
Yeah, and the game's good. Yeah. Really good. It's really good. Really good. All right. And hopefully this has been a really good show for you. I'm sure there's been lots of controversy, lots of things for you guys to hop.
Forget about it.
Lots of stuff for you guys to hop onto the official thread on Shaq News and comment about. You can also check us out on our Facebook page where you can see the weekly video as well. Thanks very much to the folks here at the Atlantis Group for hosting us as always. Yay, thank you.
And thanks, Jamie.
Thanks to thanks, Jamie. Thanks, Del Rio. And, of course, James Stevenson here from Insomniac.
Thank you. Anything, all.
Where should we keep up with you?
I am at James Stevenson, and you can also follow at Insomniac Games or like Insomniac Games or Outer Knots on Facebook. And happy E3 to everyone. It's going to be fun observing it along with the rest of you. I'm really, really excited for next week.
Happy E3. Mr. Jeff Mattis, thank you very much, of course.
Sure. And you can follow me at Jeff Mattis on Twitter.
And then finally, our plans for next week include we will have the new Shaq News Daily Video show up every day of the week. We're going to recap these press conferences the first 3 days, and we will have the hottest games from the show and stuff that I'm interested in. I'll be looking stuff over and pulling that together so you get a quick video catch up. We'll have montage from the floor. We're going to have a big weekend confirmed at the end of next week, so lots to do. Lots to get ready. Good yourself. It's going to be a fantastic E3. On that note, that is your weekend confirmed, folks, and we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta feel she's ready. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.